And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Unafeared to talk about just about anything, because damn, you know, today's going to be a good day. I'm really excited about talking to Jeremy Kaufman, the second hour library, and their decentralized digital library controlled by the community, LBRY.io. Jeremy Kaufman, we're going to be talking, it's the future. In the third hour, Jesse Walker, his article entitled Trumpland on Reason.com is an article I read in Reason, and it was kind of like he went on the road to see what was up, and he's like, damn, you know. So we're going to be talking about that. But, you know, right in line with that, in the first hour, Dr. Frank Tamburi's on, going to say hello. We got the Republican National Convention started, and he's going to be covering it for us and making sure that we know what's up. So let's go ahead and check in with Frank. Hello, Frank. How are you?
Good. Good morning, everybody. I feel out of sync. I can't do a Trump report on a Tuesday. It's too strange.
Yeah. Now keep up next to the mic, man. I'm losing you. Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Wait. Now, tell us about the convention. It's already started. I mean, not that I'm paying attention, don't care, but you know, I'm just, that's why, you know, Dr. Frank's gonna take care of it for us. You know, it's this week, right?
It's this week. Actually, today is a big day. Yesterday was just sort of the primer. Before we get into the convention, something we got to start with, though, and that is Mike Pence, Governor Pence here. We discussed it a little bit on the last Trump report, because it was not official. Matter of fact, we made the call in the after show, if you remember, last Thursday. So we really did not know who exactly was going to be the vice presidential pick, and it was him. So I just wanted to start off, because that was really a strange time for Trump going into this convention. You have to understand, Donald Trump is all about image, clearly. I mean, he's the ultimate image guy, everything aside from his hair. He's got pretty much manicured down. The thing is that he has been working on the vice presidential pick from day one. In other words, he's been planning. I mean, obviously, he knew that he was going to win from the beginning, kind of as I did, I guess. But the thing is, this VP pick, he really wanted to be special. He really wanted it to be his first true act as president. Is showing, you know, basically choosing the vice presidential pick, the reasons why he wanted all of this weight to be thrown on his VP pick. And then the way he was going to do it is not only to show off how brilliant his decision would be, you know, and I say that serious but also flippantly, kind of depends on your point of view, but he wanted to do it in such a way to say, I'm president, I can show you how to make a decision, I've shown you on The Apprentice how to do this, and now we're going to make this big event, kind of like on The Apprentice, where after a whole season, then he has the giant show where they do, okay, here's the, you know, we're going to reveal who The Apprentice is going to be, this whole big deal. So I know I'm ramping this up, Ernie. I know I'm a bit longer in this beginning. I'm just saying you have to understand how much he has been putting into this VP pick. I've never seen a presidential candidate make such a big deal about how he was going to do it. And he said that it was going to happen during the convention. So during the convention, he was going to announce his VP pick. And then everything started to fall apart, in a sense, is that, first of all, he wasn't sure exactly which who to pick, because at the last minute, he hung out with Governor Pence at some rally in Indiana and really hit it off with him. We talked about this during our show last time. Then he turns around and he realizes that Pence, under Indiana law, has to, under state law, has to announce if he's going to step down by July 12th or whatever the date was. It was basically last Friday. He had to announce that under Indiana law, so if he was going to be VP pick. So therefore, it was throwing off Trump because he really wanted to do this over the convention, but now he's forced to have to relay and basically explain who his guy is on Friday. And then he made the excuse, well, if I do it on Friday, then, of course, the rest of you get a whole weekend to talk about it on the news cycle going into the convention, which kind of made sense. So, okay, so he'll do it on Friday. But then, of course, we have the shootings going on. And it's been, unfortunately, weeks of shooting. Every other day there's something else coming up. So the news cycle just kept getting thrown off. So then some people at the convention made note, and some news people found out that Pence was going to be the nominee, because all of the other nominees for VP, Chris Christie, Newt Gingrich, they were all now released prematurely on the speaker's list. And the one person that was on the top list of Trump's people that was not on the speaker's list was Pence. So if Pence was in the top 30 and didn't have a speaking spot, that meant that he was going to be the VP pick. And so that paper went out, and of course, Trump got really ticked off about that, because it's just, what I'm getting at is this whole presentation of the VP pick that he made such a big deal. It's kind of really interesting how much of a deal he made this. It all started falling apart, and it's not a huge issue, but the media that can't stand Trump has been ripping him apart about how disorganized he is and how it didn't work out and how it's been a disaster and all. And of course, at the end of the day, it's like, what's the disaster? So what big deal? We've got shootings and problems, but, you know, so he picked Pence. The problem is that Pence himself is very vanilla. And ultimately, I think it's the proper choice for him about why he picked Pence. But the fact that he's kind of vanilla, it meant that Trump had to actually, in the news cycle, had to pump up Pence, because Pence is not Chris Christie. He's going to go out there and get all the attention. So there's not much to talk about with him, and it kind of fell flat in a big way, because Pence, there's not much to talk about. The media was all ready to jump on whoever he picked, and Pence, everyone's going, well, who's this guy? anyway, I just wanted to point out that it was really kind of an issue with Pence in many ways, and we'll see how he drums up any support during this convention. I think Pence is a great option in a sense, because he fits the bill of what Trump has been talking about. You know, he wants someone that's an insider, which Pence is, but yet he's not too much as such. You know, he's in part of the Liberty Alliance, or the Freedom Caucus we talked about last week in the House. At least he helps set that up. He's kind of measured of a man. And in essence, I think he works out, because you don't need two Trumps. You don't need a Trump and a Chris Christie. You don't need a Trump and someone else. What's going to work with this is that Trump goes around the country, and he's the flash in the, not flash in the pan, but he's, you know, he's the notoriety, and Pence will be the person behind the scenes that works on Capitol Hill trying to make all of Trump's, you know, whatever his theory of the day is, or whatever his thoughts are, and he talks on the media, and then Pence's job is to have to translate that on Capitol Hill in a calm way, and hopefully out of the media, because we don't need media having two different people saying different, you know, two different versions of stories to the media. So I think Pence will be the very measured translator to what Trump says. So I think it's a good pick.
All right. Well, that's a, you know, good start. You know, Frank's kind of, you know, building it for you. When we come back, we'll finish up with Frank, but the main thing is I wanted to give you a list of the speeches over the next 4 days. You know, who's going to be talking, who has already talked, and just going over the list of names, it's you can tell this was crafted. We'll share. that phone is so low, you're at like half the volume, and I got it cranked up all the way.
Really? Come on. Wow. I mean, I remember last time you told me that, and that was my little shitty phone, and now I have, this is my brand new iPhone. I'm talking right into it.
Oh, so it's an iProduct. Okay. Well, just you know, keep the microphone up and you
okay.
Know.
I'll fall deeper into it. Now, I'm really surprised you're saying that because it's a brand new iPhone. I didn't think I'd have this.
Are you on a headset or not?
No. It's on speakerphone.
No.
Makes it worse.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
Take it off and let me test and see.
All right. It's off now.
Oh my God, that's totally different.
Is it better?
Yes. So do it like that.
All right, buddy. You got it.
Yeah, Donna usually tells the guests, do not have it on speaker.
Oh, well.
Okay, let's see. Oh, okay, then just a second. I'm going over the list. Okay. Do you have the speaker list?
I'm pulling up here. There's some other things that have been going on at the convention, but I'll try and add in the speaker list here, huh? They've been busting on Melania, all the hate for her.
Yeah.
And they're saying now that there's plagiarized it. That's going to be the new theme. Yesterday's theme was Make America Safe Again. Today's going to be a different theme. They're having a different theme for each day. Let's see. Day one speaker. And of course, also Hillary, it's interesting because, you know, her thing is she was not picking. She didn't want to pick her VP pick until she got Trump's pick. If it was Newt or somebody, and the fact they picked Pence, it's throwing off Hillary as well because, you know, they don't know how to handle it. Like, well, who's Pence and what's the deal and what's the angle? And the thing is, Pence is measured. He doesn't have a lot of stuff in his background. So it's kind of throwing Hillary off because they were expecting a bombastic choice. Anyway, I just wanted to go lead off with that because it's very easy to ignore the whole VP pick. That was the centerpiece to his entire campaign. And, it was just happening right when we're getting off the air last time, and then now it's already everything else that's going on, and it's never been talked about, so that's why I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I'm, let's see. Yeah, I'm going through this, list, and it's like, I can see what he's doing.
How do you mean?
It's a flavor. It's a march. It's a pageant. You know, it's building up on certain issues. We'll go over it when we come back. But I'm just going to go through it real quick of the people that he has speaking. And this list, you can see it's a negotiation. Yeah.
Well, one of the things, too, is he's not a lot of the celebrities. He also promised celebrities, and not that he's just playing Hollywood, but he wanted to show, you know, his star power, which is usually only the Democrats. And at the last minute, the last three, four weeks, all these celebrities and sports people that were all supposed to show up, they're not showing up. They're all saying,
there aren't any roads.
Okay, we're back. We're yakking. All right, this is what's coming up. The 41st Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio has begun the 18th to the 21st. Well, that's today. And Monday, there was, I guess it started yesterday in some way. Mm-hmm. You know, Make America Safe Again, okay? Well, it starts off yesterday with, there's governor this and senator that and so on, whatever. But this is, you know, kind of give you the gist of it. in the early afternoon. It started off with Jamil Shaw, father to 17-year-old Jamil Shaw Jr., who was killed by an undocumented immigrant. Then it's Willie Robertson, star of A&E's hit show Duck Dynasty. Okay, so there's that crowd. Then Governor Rick Perry of Texas, Marcus Luttrell, U.S. Navy SEAL, retired. Then Scott Baio, actor, producer, and you remember him from the 80s, of Charles in Charge. I don't know what the heck that was about. He had to have his Hollywood actor guy. I guess that was the guy that...
All right, wait. We got to talk about that, because that just came out a few days ago, and it was in headline news. Scott Baio to talk at the Trump rally, and I swear to God, I let out a guffaw of all guffaws. I'm like, Scott Baio, like this is where we come down to, Scott Baio. And here's the story behind this.
Yeah, the boyfriend of the daughter on Happy Days.
Yeah, exactly. He played Chachi on Happy Days, right? He had the Joni. Remember, Joni loves Chachi. For all you old-timers, that lasted a season, and everyone's probably rolling their eyes now, right? Well, that's Scott Baio. Every woman who's listening to my voice right now probably had Scott Baio posters from Teen Beat magazine in your bedroom. I'm sure you're a teenager. I know. That's what we're talking about.
Not that's anything wrong. I'm just wondering why him. What's his
That's what I'm getting at. I'm first bringing up, of all the celebrities, you know, you've got, I mean, the Clintons will be bringing in Barbra Streisand and Tom Hanks. And here on the Republicans, we got Scott Baio, right? And he's the celebrity. Now, here's the deal why. Here's what's going on. Again, he had two promises for this convention. One was that he was going to announce the VP pick. That was going to be the headline of all the headlines. He was going to announce it. So that huge part, that centerpiece, got wiped out. And I know I spent the last 15 minutes on it, but it's really important to understand that for this convention. The next is he was going to bring in celebrities. Couple reasons. The first is because the Democrats always get celebrities, and Republicans never have celebrities, except for Arnold. We have Arnold Schwarzenegger and maybe Bruce Willis, if anything. Of course, the last time they had a celebrity was Clint Eastwood. Remember when he spoke at the Mitt Romney deal, and he spoke to the chair, and he talked to the chair, thinking it was Obama, and a lot of people thought that was a joke. So you kind of get a lot of older celebrities, Charlton Heston, you know, and his waning years. And I guess it just kind of always seemed awkward having these older celebrities. And Trump's like, no, I'm the future, and everyone loves me, right? Everyone loves Donald Trump, and all the celebrities love me. And honestly, I kind of thought that he was right with this because, you know, Trump is Mr. Celebrity. He does, you know, the Howard Stern show constantly, and Howard's definitely, you know, plugged into that whole celebrity culture. So I'm thinking, okay, he's definitely had a bunch of celebrities. And then what started happening was these celebrities started backing out. About a couple months ago, they started backing out. Then he switched to athletes. And that's when he got, Bobby Knight to endorse him, you know, during the campaign.
Tom Brady.
He's like, okay. Yeah, it's like, okay, forget the celebrities. I'll have the sports figures because they're winners. They're winners and they know how to win and all this stuff. So he went with the sports figures. And he had Tim Tebow, for instance. Tim Tebow was going to speak and Bobby Knight was going to speak. And all of a sudden, that starts falling apart. Tim Tebow says, the Sports Illustrated, I never agreed to speak. I heard about it in the papers, supposedly. And then Bobby Knight goes, well, I can't really make it, but he's going to call in. I think they're making a video. He's making a little video that they're going to play. Now, how he can't find the time, because he's retired, I think, to show up at the convention, I don't know. And so the celebrities start backing out. And the sports people. And from what I hear, it's because of all the pressure they got. You know, it's one thing to come out if you're Bruce Willis. And that's the kicker, that you cannot come out in Hollywood as a Republican unless you're financially independent and near retirement. That is why they always get old celebrities.
Yeah.
Because Charlton Heston doesn't care if he doesn't do another movie again. And that shows you the prejudice in Hollywood. And everyone's afraid. If you think they're afraid of Mitt Romney and, you know, endorsing him, imagine this Trump issue. So that's why, at the end of the day, he has Scott Baio. And the reason he's got Scott Baio is that Baio has been one of the strongest Hollywood Trump supporters out there. And Baio just hosted a giant celebrity fundraiser in Hollywood just a couple weeks ago. So Trump was just there, and then I guess Beto organized it at his little house or his mansion or whatever. He goes, you know what? I think I'll have you come speak at my convention. So that's how it turned into Beto.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good history. Thank you. After him is Kent Terry and Kelly Terry Willis, brothers to patrol agent Brian Terry, who was killed by Mexican drug dealers. Mm-hmm. So you still got this, you know, the whole day there is this undocumented Mexican thing. And Sabine Durden, mother of Dominic Durden, who was killed after being hit by an unlicensed, uninsured, unregistered illegal immigrant with a truck. Then there's others and sheriff this and representative that and Republican what's his face and I'm going to be and whatever. Then it's a mother of a U.S. Navy SEAL killed in line of duty in Afghanistan. See Jeff Sessions, U.S. Senator from Alabama, Armed Services, Budget, Judiciary Committees, you know, that kind of thing. The first senator to endorse Trump. Rudy Giuliani, you know, former mayor of New York City. You know how that happened. Melania Trump, wife of Donald Trump, goes right after Rudy. There was a reason for that, I'm sure. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, U.S. Army retired, former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is interesting. Let's see, it goes down. Ryan Zinke, U.S. Representative for Montana and a former Navy SEAL. Then it's survivors of Benghazi attacks. You have Mark Geist, John Keegan, Pat Smith. You know, Pat's the mother of a former, you know, that died. There's two members of the Benghazi Annex Security Team. And a lot, and all this whole thing is, it's the whole Benghazi thing. Those guys weren't supposed to be there anyway. They're kind of a hush-hush behind the scenes, make money. It's just, it's interesting. Then Tuesday, it starts off with Donald Trump will be the officially nominated as for president. So that happens as early as Tuesday. I didn't understand that. And we'll talk about that. Then it goes Eric Trump, Tiffany Trump, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, Dana White, president of Ultimate Fighting Championship, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. McConnell gets to talk. So there's negotiations went on there, I'm sure. Governor Scott Walker from Wisconsin talks. Then it goes down Paul Ryan. All right, well, we got Paul Ryan, then Governor Christie, okay, then he's got his general manager of Trump Winery. I want to make sure, hey, Trump Wine, man, damn it. And Donald Trump Jr., his son, then Ben Carson, second to last, that's on tonight. So Ben Carson will be one of the later speakers, and then Wednesday it goes into Newt Gingrich. Ted Cruz, Laura Ingraham. I mean, you know, it's so there are some stars in here, and it's just, you know, big, you know, Scott Walker again, Marco Rubio, Newt Gingrich.
This is your Roberts and Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Monday, gold is $5 lower at $1,330 per ounce, and silver is 28 cents lower at $20 per ounce. Bitcoin is currently trading at $675. Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has been helping clients buying and selling precious metals for nearly 40 years. For more information, give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
LRN.fm is proud to announce our official listening apps for Android and iOS devices. Now you can easily tune into our streams anywhere, anytime on your smartphone or tablet. Just visit apps.lrn.fm or search for lrn.fm in the Android or Apple app stores. Please download, rate us 5 stars, then share the link on your social media and let your friends and family know how you're listening to lrn.fm. Download it now, free, at apps.lrn.fm.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and just read off real quick the other speakers that I didn't get to for Wednesday and then Thursday, because there's a theme here. You can see it's a star power kind of thing, but I'm not seeing stars as much as I'm seeing politics, and I'm just...
That's my point. What I'm saying is, this whole convention is not going the way that he has been promising for all this time, and I'm a little surprised he's not delivering the goods of what he said. Not that I care about stars. I mean, I think it's fine, but he's kind of reduced to, you know, he doesn't have the celebrity.
Are you on speaker again?
Yeah. Well, I'm off the air. Hold on. All right, I'll put it. So he doesn't have the stars that he thought he'd be having to compete with the Democrats. Then he doesn't have the sports people that he thought he'd have in his butt. Then he's looking for the politicians, and they're not coming out. And a matter of fact, Judge Buttrick even talked about it, which I agreed that, you know, at the end of the day, he's not going to have the establishment people. There's, you know, you're not going to have Bush. You're not going to have all the, you know, I mean, McCain. All these Republicans are not showing up, which is fine with me. You know, screw them. But he's making this play. He's got a last minute deal with Ted Cruz. And that's a whole thing to talk about in the air. And all of this, I mean, they're still negotiating right now. I mean, Ernie, if you're not watching this, yesterday, the anti...
Oh, my God. I missed it?
Yeah, Cruz didn't even... I know. Cruz didn't even have his speech done because technically people who were knew that he didn't want to let his speech out because he knew that the anti-Never Trump movement was still going to make a play from the floor to change the party rules from the floor. So there was this whole battle yesterday on the floor to try to throw him out, and they got squashed yesterday. So who knows if Ted?
So what was the method of them doing? I want to talk about that on the air, but what's the method of them challenging?
Basically, what we knew that they would try and do, which was that
suspend the rules.
Suspend the rules. They can change the rules if you have enough delegates to do so. And I'll go over a couple more details on that on the air. But that's pretty much what happened. And they got squashed, which was very interesting to see that.
Yeah, so. you had to expect it. And I'm wondering, you know, what form it took. Because I've been to enough national conventions and covered them and whatever and been to them. And that I get it. You know, it has to be orchestrated from the floor. You have to get recognized by the chair. You have to be, I mean, there's all kinds of things that... Like libertarians, maybe a little bit more, you know, follow the rules. Not a whole lot. But, you know, I mean, it's, I'm just wondering how that mechanism happened. All right, well, we'll get to it. We're coming back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, we haven't even got into the atmosphere of the convention itself and the police outside and all that. Don't know. I care a little bit enough to have Dr. Frank explain it to us. But I want to go over the list of speakers here. Phil Ruffin is tomorrow night. He's a hotelier and owner of Treasure Island Hotel and Casino. So he kind of got that crowd in. You know, that's interesting. He's got some entrepreneurs here and a little bit, and founder of that and CEO of what you call it and, you know, that kind of stuff. But we have Governor Scott Walker gets a couple of speeches, you know, this week. Marco Rubio, you want to know what happened behind on there and how that happened. Eric Trump, his son, Vice President of Trump Organization. Then Newt and Callista Gingrich. Now, they're speaking before Mike Pence does. Now, Mike Pence is going to be Wednesday night and governor of Indiana and his VP pick. Then it's Thursday. That speech by party nominee Donald Trump. Okay, now this is the start off of Thursday, the 7:30 p.m. I guess this is whichever time zone. And then you have RNC Chairman Rens Priebus after Donald. And that'll be interesting. Peter Thiel, you know, billionaire, venture capitalist, hedge fund, PayPal, kind of got some money guy. Peter Thiel. Now that's interesting. All right, so we'll see how that comes. Following Peter is Ivanka Trump, the daughter of Minda. Oh, you're getting the payoff on Thursday, okay? It's Donald Trump, chairman of the Republican Party, Rens Priebus, Peter Thiel, Ivanka Trump, and then, you know, some this guy, that guy, governor, representative, blah, blah, blah. But then, second to last, is Jerry Falwell. Now, Jerry Falwell, Liberty University president, evangelist Jerry Falwell, Jr. Now, he's coming up. Then, speech... After him is Tom Barrack, CEO of Colony Capital. Who's he?
Don't know.
So you can see here, I'm wondering what the flavor was, and I'll tell you what immediately popped out to me. It was traditional politics, Republican, Mitch McConnell, Newt Gingrich, Rubio, Cruz, all these guys. And I'm going, but, you know, you got, you know, your Duck Dynasty guy, and you got your Scott Baio guy, and you got some, you know, so I'm wondering from this speaker's list and what they've been announcing and what's coming, What are they saying? What is the message to America?
There's not really a message to America, in my opinion. This is what I'm trying to get at. This convention is an absolute disappointment from at least what was promised. I said this last segment. I mean, I'm a little surprised. He does not have the celebrities that he was going to use. He was trying to use the celebrity component and the sports people. I can't stress this enough. He was really hammering that because that was going to make him more amenable to the public. All this bashing of the media saying, well, you know, no one likes Trump and no one likes him. But if he could turn around and bring common, like current sports people and celebrities in, which was his real, you know, that, I mean, he's got the number one shows on television is called The Celebrity Apprentice, for God's sake, right? I mean, he's got all these celebrities that are begging to work for him. And then when all of a sudden he needs somebody to speak at his convention, nobody shows up. I mean, this is the power of the media right now and how much pressure is on people.
Yeah,
and
he doesn't get
anybody.
I want to see the show. I mean, there's a special TV two-hour movie on just this. You know, the behind the scenes on how Hollywood works in politics.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it'll be interesting, too, to see. Remember that show we talked about on your show? It's called The Circus. Remember? It's that show on Showtime.
Yeah, followed campaigns from the beginning. And they started.
Yeah, from the beginning. I'd love to watch that and see what it's like now during the convention if it's still going. But anyway, going back to your theme of this convention.
You had mentioned for the audience, you know, what they had a scene in that series they were doing behind the scenes following different campaigns. And you had the big money that was like, you know, gosh darn, I mean, they were even saying it, gosh darn it, we can't just pick people in this American democracy, ha, 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 ha. And god dang it, we got to go through this crap and, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they were saying that it was never Trump. It was the crowd that was not, whatever we got to do, not him. And it's a Republican operatives behind the campaigns they gave you a little glimpse of in their smoke filled back room, literally with the round table, and
it was astounding. It was like central casting. I mean, they were literally in a room smoking cigars, and I thought they were making it up. It was really happened. And so anyway, it's called The Circus. But what's happened now is that he did not deliver for the people, at least the celebrity part. I mean, you've got Duck Dynasty and Scott Baio. I mean, this is what we have. I mean, where's Arnold Schwarzenegger? I mean, my God, I'm shocked about that one. Schwarzenegger, the ultimate Republican, he's carrying on the Apprentice television show, right? Trump's stepping down, and Arnold is picking it up. So, I mean, he's the ultimate Republican. How is Arnold not speaking there? This is the power. There's something really screwy about what's going on behind the scenes. I know I'm like a broken record on
this. No. This is a movie in and of itself. I mean, yeah. You know, how this really works.
It's a real deal. And keep in mind, Schwarzenegger is friends with Kasich. Remember, he endorsed Kasich,
right.
And Kasich has not endorsed Trump. And now Kasich said, well, you know, screw you, I'm not showing up to your convention, even though it's up the street from the governor's office in Cleveland. And so Trump turned around and called out, you know, Kasich and calling him weak and whatever else. So now back to the theme is that he's surrounding himself with Trump, you know, acolytes from the shows. See, what you're not seeing, because I try and keep your blood pressure down, Ernie, and I watch Fox, so you don't have to.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, but here's the thing, is that most of that list, at least from yesterday and today, are all Fox people. They're commentators. They're people that I see all the time on Fox. There's this one sergeant, this African-American sergeant, who's a great guy. I mean, I think he's fantastic, who speaks. He's always speaking against Black Lives Matter and calling it, you know, an internal terrorist group. And he did a great job. So a lot of the faces are what you see on some of these shows to reinforce, I guess, the people that have already diehard Trump.
Well, might as well be an episode of Fox News because they're going to be there covering it, and it just kind of, they walk from one podium to the stage anyway. What's the difference?
Well, you know what, Ernie? That's, you know, this is the whole point of today's show. That's what really shocked me, is that it feels like a grand version of the Fox News channel right now. And I didn't expect that. And I know some of your listeners are probably rolling their eyes going, oh, come on, Dr. Campbell.
Yeah, right.
Obvious. No, but I'm really serious. He was really pushing for this convention was the first step to go mainstream, to get outside of this Fox box and everything that's in this little drama that's been playing out. He needs to go big and large. And I mean, heck, I was kidding a little bit, but I was not putting it past Trump to like end the show with a surprise performance by Kiss. You know, Gene Simmons coming out blowing fire or something. I mean, that's what I was thinking he was going to play off. And you can see it a little bit from his introduction. Did you see how Trump came out yesterday to introduce
Biden? Oh, no. Okay, so hey, explain to us the opening.
What's that?
Explain to us the opening of the convention. What was the first impression?
Well, the opening was pretty boring. Well, it's kind of boring. You know, not boring. I mean, they did the Pledge of Allegiance, which I don't mean that to be boring. But anyway, they just did the introductory things. Not much happened. I mean, the Duck Dynasty guy, you know, spoke. But what I mean is at the end of the night, Melania was to speak. When there's a whole scandal about that now. They said that she plagiarized Michelle Obama's speech, which is a whole other deal. I mean, the Democrats are flipping out because they're trying to nail everything that Trump is doing, whatever he has left. And Melania is a really great asset, and I'm not being too funny with that. I mean, she's been this quiet anchor from behind, and according to some poll, which, you know, some poll, it's you know, I'm sure it's BS, but it was a liberal poll saying that Melania Trump is the most hated perspective first lady in, like, modern history. Now, where this comes up, what poll is for prospective first ladies, but supposedly she's hated. Personally, I think it's women that are just jealous and envious of her, and so they're looking for ways to shoot her down.
So really, they were attacking his wife.
Yeah, they're attacking his wife. This is so
well, how well did she do? Did she do well?
She did fine. I mean, my better half thought she was very poised and did a great job. Read off the teleprompters quite a bit, but people said that she plagiarized her speech from Obama's wife. Yeah, right.
You know, all right, more. Frank Tamburi.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay, last segment. How you want to do it?
All right, well, two things. First is we have to talk about the floor vote to overthrow Trump. It was the last squeal of your people of having your buddy Jeb win. So we got to talk about that.
Oh, then, yeah. Well, the convention ain't over yet.
Yeah. We can argue this on the air, but we have to first talk about that because that was profound. I mean, they're glossing over it, but that was the last death nail to the anti-Trump.
I don't know. It ain't over. And, you know, the thing is that you didn't, you know, I'm not going to be able to give you the dollar on Thursday because it ain't over. You know, when's it not actual?
You just keep stretching this.
Well, when's the nomination? Is it Wednesday?
No, it's the Thursday, like the balloon drop. You know, it's got the balloon drop. When the balloons drop.
I guess you got to wait a week.
This Thursday when the balloons drop, I get my dollar. So anyway, that's.
Oh, are you coming over tonight?
Yeah, I told.
Yeah, no, that's going to be a good deal.
We have to do that, and then the second topic. First, let's lead off with Trump's introduction because that's just. We ended on that. Pull up a picture when you're sitting there of Trump. Yeah, Trump introduction at RNC. You're going to see this amazing sequence where he shows up like some Star Wars thing. He's got all this backlighting and like fog machines. And I mean, it was like this crazy thing. And you see his silhouette come out like he's some rock star. So that one is going around. That's like going viral. So pull up, you know, his appearance, first appearance at the RNC. That'll be a good picture.
As an image?
Yeah, as an image. Yeah, just pull up the image. It's going viral. It's like his silhouette behind this.
Yeah, I see, yeah.
You see it, yeah. So that was hysterical. But anyway, there's that. I know.
All right, here we're back.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your life.
Okay, the picture that we got up, Dr. Frank Tamburi said, hey, man, you got to pull up the introduction to Trump.
I got to break free.
Fog machine kind of silhouette, whatever, and there's his wife, you know, and of course, you know, that's going to be a lot of the attention is going to be his wife. Be like, Jackie Kennedy. It's going to be what clothes she's wearing and the style of and kind of in her cause of. I'm wondering if they've, you know, picked her cause yet. But the his is, comes in as a silhouette, and it, you know, looks like Trump. I mean, that was kind of the point, you know, I'm sure. And so that was the opening of it. And that go over well?
I got everyone's attention. I mean, they played this music. I forget, it was some dramatic music. And then you've got all, if you guys haven't seen, just check it out online. It's worth it. And it's like this greenish hue backlighting and fog machines. And, you know, it had all the strobes. It was like a rock concert. And all of a sudden, you see the silhouette of Trump. It was so funny when you see it live. Is that it's not just his picture, you can see the silhouette, you can tell it's Trump. But Trump, you know, like me, like many of us, we have a certain gait. And when you've got all this music, dun, 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 like the introduction of the basketball team coming in, and then Trump shuffles in with his shoulders hunched a bit and his little all shucks me, and you just got to see it. It's like seeing a silhouette, a performance at some like theater show or something. It was worth it. Anyway,
it was WWE.
Yeah, exactly. It was a WWE entrance.
Yeah.
And so he does that. He brings in his wife. And I ended the last segment that his wife.
Wrestling.
You're right. It's a good analogy. She's like Jackie O. She's going to be like Jackie O. And that is why the liberals can't handle it, because Jackie O belongs to them. Camelot was liberals, okay? Conservatives are Barbara Bush wearing a bunch of a little pearl necklaces, okay, like your grandma does. That's the difference between a liberal and a Democrat. You can't have the sexiest first lady finally to be outdoing JFK's Jackie O. And that's, it sounds really trite. Maybe it's a woman thing, I don't know, but that's really going on with a lot of the female, I have to say this, reporters, the Washington Post and others. Melania's just getting trashed. They're saying, oh, well, we certainly hope Melania has her cards, because who knows if she's really legal or not, and whether she's a real citizen or not.
And
they're nailing.
Wow.
It's really sick what they're doing. I mean, women sometimes are the worst. I'm sure that some of you ladies out there know.
Before we run out of time, I want to hear about the floor fight, right? That they're the last effort for Jeb.
Yeah, so we got two things.
Second to last effort. We ain't got the last one yet.
Yeah, so it's two things left to talk about. First is the floor fight we'll do now. And then if we have time, the rallies outside, because the rallies already started yesterday, and they busted through the free speech zone.
Got
but
it.
Anyway,
go.
As far as the floor fight, this is really important, especially for Ernie, because his dollar is mine soon, is that the last squeal, the last little moment for the anti-Trump movement happened just yesterday, for some of you who haven't heard. So on the floor, what happened was that the anti-Trump movement tried to make their last offensive, and they threw out from the floor a motion which would make them pass a new rules, right, the rules committee, which they can make this crap up whenever they want. That's been the whole issue here. And they wanted a rule thrown up that says that anyone coming from a state that has bound delegates, that they're allowed to switch their vote, they're not bound anymore. Essentially, that's what they did. And so they brought it up to the House, they brought it up to from the convention floor. And the person who is presiding, his name is Womack. I'm not sure of his first name here. Womack, W-O-M-A. Steve Womack. He's a representative from Arkansas, Republican. And he's presiding over it. And it sounds like, it depends what side you're on with this, but he was handpicked by the Trump people to be a hard-nosed guy who basically just shut it down. So any of you people who are Ron Paul people, and you remember how every time, and all you Ron Paul people know what I'm talking about, is any time someone, the Republicans would have a vote that had anything to do with fairness for us, you know, they would say, okay, how many people say aye? And you got people go aye. And how many people say nay? And you're nay. We're all against it. And they say, ayes have it. Gavel. Next motion, right?
Yeah.
How many times Republicans would just, you know, ignore all of the nays from our organization, our group?
So the people were prepared for that one.
Yep, yeah, exactly. So what was interesting guys, and this is the fun. This is why I love Donald Trump. I hate to say this. Is he is our avenger. Whether you like Trump or not, he is avenging all the work that we did as Ron Paul people, because now the establishment, they're getting a big dose of their own damn medicine right now, because now they're being locked out. And they're saying, wait a minute, it's not our guy. And then they keep trying to, you know, throw the rules. They're trying to use the rules, and they're getting shut down very quickly. Now, was it done fairly by this guy, what's his name again, Womack? Who's to say? I mean, I have to say, since I'm more supporting Trump, it sounds great. You know, I mean, the establishment.
Oh, so Frank finally came out before the nomination. He's a Trump supporter.
Well, no, I mean,
you said it.
Campaign. I guess I am.
You said it.
There we go. I mean, I don't know. So that was a very interesting point to watch. And yesterday on the Sean Hannity show, many of the commentators were all supporting Trump, and they said, you Republicans, we have held our nose, and this is my view of it and what they kind of said. We all wore clothespins for your people. When Mitt Romney went, we held our nose. When John McCain did it, we held our nose. When Bob Dole was up, we held our nose. Yeah, you know what, establishment? It's time for you to learn how to use a clothespin, and if you want, we'll send instructions, because we've been using it for a long time. That's pretty much what's going on, and they're saying this on the air, on Fox. So the anti-establishment movement is now taking over Fox. It's historic to watch the John McCain forces, you know, who refuse to show up. They think they're going to teach a lesson to the Trump people.
Nobody cares.
They are being marginalized.
Nobody cares. So where's the representation of the Bushwalker machine? I'm wondering, you know, is that McConnell? I mean, we got some Newt up there.
There's no one for Bush Walker, and that's the kicker. So when you read that list, the only people really, you have Ted Cruz and you have Rubio. Now, Rubio kind of reluctantly agreed to do it. Cruz, it's interesting. It turns out that Trump was trying to get, he was trying to marshal some unification and get some people at his convention. Well, a number of key Republicans who, I don't even know their names, people that's probably not worth it right now, but they had said, officially and unofficially, that they could not support Trump unless he at least tried to make overtures to Ted Cruz, because these are all like never Trump people, Ted Cruz people. So there's been a lot of courting to Ted Cruz. So Trump went out of his way, and he went out of his way to find Cruz and work with him a bit. Cruz refuses still to endorse him, and yet still Trump said, even if you won't endorse me, would you speak at my convention? And Cruz agreed to do that. And that was such an overture that many of the never Trump people decided to help, not support Trump, but a lot of the never Trump people decided not to go further with the House floor vote and continue this delegate revolt if he at least went out of his way to support Ted Cruz, even if Cruz didn't support Trump. And Trump did that just last week, and that got quite a bit of attention from the establishment. So what you won't realize, although it's kind of lackluster lineup, he did secure people like Cruz and others only because he decided to reach out an olive branch. What's interesting is that Cruz, though, refused to endorse him and didn't even have his speech written, I mean, whether he's lying or not about it, because I think Cruz knew that they were still going to try to overthrow him from the House floor. And if that House floor vote worked, Cruz was already right there to take the mantle. So Cruz is still wily, getting ready to jump on Trump, even as of yesterday, until Womack shut that whole thing down. So that's the whole deal there. Lastly, I guess whatever time we have, is the outside rally. So the Democrats, or the Occupy Wall Street people, and never Trump, they started their march. They were secluded to the free speech zone. And keep in mind, you know, they're all concerned because Cleveland, Ohio, has open carry. So everyone has guns there, at least the way they're presenting it. You have open carry firearms, and you have people shooting at cops, and they're not suspending the thank God, I mean, suspending
Cleveland
your First
police
Amendment right.
Asked John Kasich to suspend the Second Amendment at the RNC convention.
Right. They asked him. He's saying no. Obviously, on political grounds, because Mr. Magoo has no principles. But anyway, it is a powder keg. I'll be shocked if nothing else goes on, if there's no shootings or something happens.
Well, was there any violence? I mean, did people have guns?
No, violence. No, day one, and Trump really didn't do anything yet. What happened was the free speech zone was in one area. But A number of them broke out of the free speech zone and began marching towards the convention, too many for the cops to control. So that was the first breakout. No violence occurred except a couple of arrests. But the fact that they already broke through and don't care what the police are saying, we've got three more days with plenty of guns. We'll see what happens.
Well, did they have any pictures of people with guns?
Yes. There was a person, like Chris, our friend Chris. There was a Chris guy there with his AR.
Very good. Yep. On which side?
David, a few Welch.
All right. That, you know, this, this is good. We got, did Donna set you up for updates throughout the week?
Yeah, she has me. I think she has just like 15 minutes for tomorrow. But that's, I mean, it's up to you. I'm sure you guys have a guest or something. I could do an hour tomorrow, too, if you'd like, but it's your call.
Well, I don't know if we got the space, but I do want to do... Well, here she is. What's the deal? You got a deal? What's the deal?
What's the deal?
Okay, tomorrow you're doing the first 15, the first segment.
Okay. And then we got what, Thursday's 3 hours.
Okay, hold on a second, Donna.
Wednesday, he's doing the first segment of the show. Thursday, he's here for 3 hours. Friday, he's doing the
Wednesday.
Segment.
Yeah, tomorrow, first hour of the show.
First
then Thursday,
segment.
He's on all 3 hours.
Yeah.
Then Friday's...
First segment,
done. There we go.
It's all good.
All right. So we'll see you tonight.
Sure, yeah. And, I'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Wait. We got time. I just want to get that taken care of. So, during the when they see a black man with a gun, how was that depicted?
All right. Well, first of all, he wasn't black. He was white. So I just meant he was like an activist, a Second Amendment activist that was there with his AR strapped over his shoulder.
Get a black man.
I know. I mean, that's a black guy, but yeah, it was a stereotypical white guy. But yeah, he was real calm, and it was great. Of course, all the cameras are around him, and. You know, oh, what does this mean? He's like, oh, what it means is the Second Amendment. You know, it just means I'm just standing here. And, what is it to you guys? So he did a great job, you know, for what it was. And it's interesting hearing the media, because most of the media, even from Fox News, like Carl, forget his last name. He's
Rove.
The Trump guy, the embedded guy.
Carl Rove?
There's this guy, Carl. He's the main Fox
That's another
reporter.
Thing. No Carl Rove.
Surprise. So this guy, Carl, he's like the main, he's the senior reporter for Fox. He really is a great journalist, I have to say. This guy, Carl, is excellent. And he's been the embedded reporter on the Trump campaign for Fox. So he's been really close and tight with Trump, but in a professional sense. But what's interesting, Ernie, is that these guys are all, they're conservatives, at least, I assume, because they're on Fox. But what's interesting is that you're starting to see the bubble that they live in because they're all from liberal New York, right? They all live in New York, Manhattan. That's where their studio is. And so a number of them have all made the trek from New York City to Cleveland to cover this convention. And many of them have done shows, their shows have shown the journey to Cleveland. And they're making a big deal about how they're leaving the bubble of New York. And for the first time since this entire Trump thing started, they're going to county fairs. They went to Hershey Park in Pennsylvania. They're taking this long trek in Fox buses to the convention. And it's interesting how they're starting to admit how much in the bubble that they're in. One example is right there with the guns, because they're conservatives. And yet when you come from New York, even they are not used to seeing people walk around with firearms. So it's been shocking and unnerving even for the Fox reporters to see. And they're like, oh my God, you have open carry. This is unbelievable. I've never seen such a thing. I'm like, dude, you guys are Fox Republican reporters. How is it this shocks you? So it shows you the bubble that even New Yorkers are in. And I know, because I'm from Pennsylvania, and you know, if it happens in the East Coast, it's news. If it happens in the West Coast, no one cares about it, right? There's definitely a prejudice and bias on how they perceive things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's going on. So it should be an interesting, today will be an interesting day. We'll see how much they keep trying to throw Melania, but they'll probably move on. I really am. I'm sorry if I spent too much time on it, but I can't stress enough how shocking it is, this convention, and how lackluster it seems to, you know, when they have Fox people, and the average person, if you don't watch Fox, you're not going to know who half these people are. And, you know, without celebrity factor, and Scott Baio, who the hell remembers him? I don't know. I'm hoping the convention gets better, or he's got those surprises, but it's not quite what I was expecting. So we'll see.
All right. Well, his wife, I mean, how long did she speak?
Oh, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You know, she was just trying to talk about how, you know, I don't know what else to tell you guys, essentially, if you don't like Donald, except, you know, he's really not what you guys think, and he's a decent person behind doors. And I think, you know what, I think, and you hit this perfectly, which is that, you know, this is a dynasty. And I think his best assets, really, is his kids. It's his family. You have his gorgeous wife who's poised. I mean, Savarda, I wasn't going to bring her up on the air, but, you know, Savarda, she gets really, you know, she's like a typical woman. You know, they get all catty and envious over women and things like that. And it's easy to take pot shots at beautiful women. And not that she does that normally, but, you know, that's kind of, it's a woman thing. And she even said, she says, wow, she did a really good job. Savarda was really impressed. The first time she's heard her speak. And she said she was poised and classy and more than what she expected. And I assume most women thought that. So therefore, they have to say she cribbed Obama's speech. Like, with all the money he has.
Well, you know, I don't remember the first lady being that big. I mean, I know Jackie got her, but I don't remember Jackie speaking at the national convention.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is my point. He doesn't have star power. I mean, he's got to find, well, first of all, nowadays, first ladies always speak. Michelle Obama spoke, I remember, because when she, I don't know if you, this is another part for your show at some point. You should do a before and after of Michelle Obama speaking. Before she was first lady, she spoke with a real urban sound, right? Kind of like a real black accent, urban accent. And then after the first year or so, you didn't hear her speak at all. Because I, you know, I myself, I'm always listening to people's diction. And a year or so after she was first lady, she didn't do any of her stuff. And then she comes out and she speaks perfect English. Mm. So she had obviously a you know, dialogue coach.
I got to get to next guest. All right, cool. Talk to you tomorrow, man, or tonight.
See you tonight.
All right, bye.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah. Yeah, no fear. No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. I'm here, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, this is something that's near and dear to my heart, and those that have been listening to the show for the years, I've been screaming, whining, bitching about this one very thing. I need the capacity to put, because I've been doing activism for, 28 years or something. I've been in the trenches. We went through the Levolution. We created Freedom's Phoenix 10 years ago. Been doing the show since 2003. And the one thing that I see that has to be is that files, videos, data is available to me without censorship. And if I can get, you know, some autonomy and, you know, freedom of cryptocurrency and whatever, that's even better. But I tell you, I put a file up, even if I'm willing to take the heat, you know, can I have it up there where it's available always forever for somebody, for something to access? Is that where I can do that? And Grandma Adjust Button, access it. Grandma Adjust Button, put it up. Grandma Adjust Button. This is one thing that I'm always, no matter what the presentation or last few years, I give a presentation and go, the solution is going to be this. At Porkfest, I did the same thing. People come up to me and they go, hey, man, didn't you go to the library, presentation? LBRY. We're going to find out if that's how you say it, too. We're talking to Jeremy Kaufman, is the, you know, the centralized library, digital library controlled by the community, the people that use it. Now, Jeremy is the CEO of Library, a digital marketplace that is decentralized and entirely controlled by its users. Now, I want to get, the first thing I want to do is ask Jeremy before we get too far into this. Jeremy, how do you pronounce the organization, the app, the service? Is it, it's LBRY. How are you guys saying it?
We're saying it as Library, but I love that you're spelling it out for your listeners.
Yeah, LBRY. I tell you, I went looking and I knew it was four letters and it took me a while to get it. So, you know, it's LBRY, and just call it the Library, I guess. We'll call it the Library, you know, for the show, just cause. Now, it's LBRY.io. Now, this is something that I don't know if you knew or they say Ernie says or something, but I've been whining and going to hackathons. I'm at different Bitcoin things and I'll do presentations and I'll go, hey, how come you guys aren't doing this? What up? Then came MadeSafe. Then there's Alexander and Descent and Storage. And, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on. And, you know, Sia, you know, is coming online, you know, and they, you know, all these different ones. And I'm paying attention to all of them. But everybody had nice things to say about Library. Tell me why.
Well, I think that compared to some of these other decentralized technologies, we're taking a bit of a different approach. In my opinion, some of them try to do too much. They overpromise and they make promises that are going to be difficult for them to fulfill. And another big difference is that all of them do not provide proper discovery, proper abilities to search and find what's on the network. So, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to provide this sort of decentralized storage, or maybe we're going to provide decentralized storage and we're going to marketize it. But even that's not enough if you're not providing people an ability to find the stuff on there, to search the network, to get to the stuff that they want to, you know, access.
So index a Yahoo. See, a lot of people don't remember how the internet was. When we first got our first emails in 93, I think, you know, around 93, we're, as libertarian activists, all of a sudden, we could see that the same machinations and politics and control and going to get some and giving up new tax, new restriction, new censorship, new was blanketed over the entire country as we started communicating with our libertarian friends. And we're going, oh, this isn't just a local, this is part of a much larger international thing. And the internet made that clear for us. Well, when you had web pages, all of a sudden people were doing web pages. Well, we had to market the web pages, and we didn't have QR codes back then. We would have definitely made use of that. But you got all these web pages, you had to promote it. Well, we were doing it and using politics, and we were doing really well. Well, what happened? All of a sudden, here comes Yahoo. A couple of kids say, hey, man, we need to, like, you know, have some kind of index. We can go find stuff. And we're going, hell yeah. And then, of course, you get into problems of, you know, they, them, those, and they do their crap, and now we need a Library. But if you have a decentralized service, it would be great to be able to have access to a list or something, be able to freaking find it. Now, that will happen on its own eventually, but you're making that part of Library's rollout, that it's got an in searchable index of some kind?
That's exactly right. So we've seen decentralized technologies for sharing data. You know, these exist now. BitTorrent exists, and BitTorrent is a remarkable technology. But in our opinion, BitTorrent has a couple of flaws. One is it's bad at the long tail. By the long tail, I mean content that's been out for a while. Maybe it fades in popularity and then it can kind of disappear because there's no market incentive for it to continue to exist. Another big one is that people can't make money off of, they can't publish, you know, via BitTorrent if they want to make money. Now, we support people publishing for free, but there are also people who would like to get paid for their work, and BitTorrent can't support that. And another really big problem with BitTorrent is, despite the fact that you can have a BitTorrent URL that points to a file, there's really no way to search this. There's no way to index it. And so what we're doing with Library is we're providing an ability to couple, you know, very understandable names or URLs and have those point to a decentralized data storage system. so that, you know, you could have LBRY:/Ernie Hancock, and that could return the listing of the content that you want to be behind that URL.
Okay, so you're selling domains.
Well, that's actually the twist on Library that makes Library different from a lot of the other systems. In fact, I'd say it's different from any other system that exists. And so we might as well get into that part a little bit, because it's one of the unique aspects, probably the most unique aspect of Library, which is names aren't sold. We'll use the word controlled to refer to names. So basically, the party or parties that choose to commit, but not spend, not destroy, essentially allocate in a reversible way, the most credits get to control where a name points.
What? Okay, so I give you an example. I go, all right, cool, I'm Freedom's Phoenix. Boom, let's do it. Somebody else goes, yeah, I put $1.25, you only had $1.20, it's mine now.
So there is time for that transition to take place. So if you've already, if you add $1.20 down, it's not like someone can put $1.25 down and it switches instantly. It's, you have a period of time where not just you, the entire community has the ability to respond to that claim. I know that this can sound a little out there.
I'm waiting for you to explain it to me, man. You got me on the edge of my seat. You keep going.
Absolutely. So it's grounded in some very sound economic theory. And if there's anyone who should get economic theory, I'm guessing it's your listeners. So I'll try to lay it out a little bit for them.
Too late. We're going to the break. we'll be back in a few minutes. We're going into the break here in just a little bit, and I didn't want to cramp you up with music and 30 seconds of Here It Goes. But the thing is that I am interested. I mean, anybody tell you, anybody listen to the show, man, I'm all over this. We've been following blockchain technology from the beginning. I think I had shows on Bitcoin in 09, certainly by 010. And
wow. This
is, so we've been, I mean, my first freaking Bitcoin, God, I know I had bought some before I got my first $3 and something Cassatius coin. So I've been, the boys. We've been talking to the boys on this, waiting for you. Yeah, waiting for you, okay? This is, I give you an example. I mean, some of the guys, I mean, you know, it's like Andreas is going to be staying here in August, early September, come visiting, saying, yo, what's up with Tuxavant? Then we got, you know, I've had Vitalik on and Eric Voorhees a bunch of time, and Roger Ver we hang, and I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. Then, of course, you know, when MadeSafe hit, I was all over that. And they do, you know, like, what, 7 million in 5 hours, and boom. And David Irvine and I, you know, tight on this, I've been paying attention to them, not giving them a deadline. I don't care. Take whatever time. I just want these features. So you're always going to have competition, but I've been very happy to see so many different projects coming up like yours. It's just which one's first to market ready, because for the last year and a half, Derek Slopey is our IT guy that lives up in Maine. He spent the last year and a half, we made a big IT change, back-end code, everything, to interface with the distributed internet. We have all the data. We have like 400 or 500 gig sitting there ready to load. All right, boom, now we're over here. All my social media, the Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that crap that I don't pay attention, don't care, is sitting there waiting for when it's time. We're going to amp the living crap out of that and push the iTunes kind of ad. We're over here now. It's been a big, giant multimedia marketing ready to go. We have magazine, newspaper. Is going to be, we're over here. Even though it may not be the most return, even though it may not be as much traffic as the World Wide Web, even though that's not the freaking point. I got 10 grandkids. I'm in this for the long haul. I know what's needed. And when there is decentralized, can't censor it, always available, international, global, there are no borders or boundaries, and we hear you, we know what you're afraid of, it's us. When that happens, I'm going to be your biggest freaking cheerleader. But I need to know that it's going to happen. And you got to, when we come back, man, you're going to have to explain to me that if I make this big investment and push, all of a sudden, 5-6 years later, man, I got to come up with $1 million to keep my domain. You see my point?
Sure. Well, I'd love to, you know, I'll get the chance to answer that. And we'd love to work with you on this, by the way. You know, so we'd be happy to work with you on you know, getting your content out there via Live.
You know how long I've been trying to get hold of you?
No, I don't. I answered your email like within a couple of hours.
You know how long it took me to find your email? No, anyway. So we've been on this, but of course it wasn't until Derek, says, "Hey man, you need to talk to library guys," because there's a lot of people, making claims that they're going to whatever,
You have to be very skeptical in this field.
And I'm sorry I missed your presentation, but I'm glad we finally hooked up. But yeah, no. This has been a big, I've been an activist for a long time, since I was freaking 28, and I'm 55 now. So imagine from 88 to now, seeing the internet develop, seeing my four teenage kids in the mid-early 2000s, seeing them go on Hot or Not and Facebook and had their MySpace, stuff, and kind of seeing how this was going and understanding, look, you guys know that you're giving your favorite color quotes and books and movies and thoughts and everything. You know you're giving it to the man, right? I mean, I just want you to know this, So this ability, that what you're talking about, is the internet that we activists were counting on as young guys in the early 90s. And then it went World Wide Web, and that private, BBS kind of faster, we got it over here thing kind of went away. It kind of went tour or whatever. But I'm going, man, I need a grandma just button add on to Firefox if I just go Chrome says and I'm here. Feel me? All right.
Yep, absolutely.
We're coming back.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come, and I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one, and I believe it could be someday it's going to come.
Oh,
on the edge of darkness.
Oh, we're on the edge of darkness, but I can feel it. Woo!
Peace train, take this country.
Yeah, get aboard that peace train. Well, I tell you, we're going to go have a good time with this. I'm Jeremy. You understand? He feels me, I think. So Jeremy Kaufman, CEO, Library, LBRY.io. You need to know that. So, all right. Jeremy, I'm looking at, we've been ready. I mean, we're trying to get ready. We were worried we weren't going to be ready in time. It's been, took longer than we thought that before this would come online, but it gave us an opportunity to start getting our crap together so that we can make a transition with all the hundreds of gigs of data that we have. And I'm going, and I keep track of how much it's going to cost to go over too. A lot of these things, you got to have some cryptocurrency to put in and maintain and keep it up and blah, 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 blah. And I'm going, all right, these are all things that I want to know about. So if I do this and I invest a lot and I say, library wins, it doesn't mean that we're not going to do other stuff, but I'm going, library wins there first, we're here and we're multimedia and kind of looking at QR codes, everybody go and telling the articles about and the newspaper and magazine and go there. And when we do that, I want to make sure this investment is like, and then somebody goes, those sites are ours now. I mean, somebody explain this to me, Jeremy.
Sure. So I'll give you the sort of the high-minded theoretical explanation, but I think there's I'll transition into the sort of common sense one.
Thank you.
So the theory here is a theory called the Coase theorem, and this theorem won the Nobel Prize in economics, even though the Nobel Prize in economics is kind of a fake thing.
Right.
but the theorem says is, If transaction costs are low, that is, it's easy to trade and there's not much friction to trade, and the rules of who controls a property are clearly defined, that is, there's not ambiguity as to who owns what, as you might see in some, alternative government systems, then property will come to be held by the parties that can get the greatest economic return on that property, right? Essentially that if the rules are clear about who owns property and it's cheap to trade that property, then the property is going to come to get held by those who can get the most out of that property. And, it's kind of shocking that that won a Nobel Prize when you think about it, because you explain it that way, like, oh, that's kind of common sense, right? That makes sense to all of us. So what we've done is we've taken those rules and we've tried to apply them. Well, in fact, we have applied them because Library is out and it's working. We've applied them to a namespace, a domain system. And so the names in Library are controlled by the party that is willing to commit but not destroy in a fully revocable way. So it's, you know, if you bid on a name, you don't get it, or you decide you don't want it later, you can get all of your money back. But the parties that are willing to commit the most money are the parties that control that name. And, you know, so in the case of something like, you know, Freedom's Phoenix or Ernie Hancock, I don't think there's anyone out there who's going to be able to get more return on that than you.
Okay, so there's that is one. Okay, I got, man, I'm already on the edge of my seat ready to say something.
Sure.
When we started Freedom's Phoenix, you're right, nobody gave a crap. You know, they're just out there being whatever. Then the Levolution hit. And you know who I am about the Levolution thing? I'm the one that created the Ron Paul Levolution logo, okay?
Oh, so wonderful.
When that hit, all of a sudden, Freedom's Phoenix said, they love you long time. And let me tell you, who doesn't give a crap how much money you're making on it? They just want to kill it. It's politics. It's Washington. It's United, we rule you, industrial empire, going to kick your ass, whoever. And they'll just price you out just because it's more convenient for them. They would nip. And this is why I was, you know, all of a sudden you started seeing YouTube gets bought up by Google. YouTube says, you know, we are changed, can't talk about that, and you don't get funded. All of a sudden Google AdWords says, nope. Antiwar.com, I'm sorry, you have Abu Ghraib images on your server and you can't have make money off a Google ad and kind of, you don't screw you, even though Google Image has more and worse, okay? And they had it up for 11, 13 years or some crap, and all of a sudden here they come. When it's convenient for those that do have resources that you're costing them some kind of money, especially if you're a journalist and you have 10 years of I gotcha PDF of LinkedIn to, I mean, here it is. There is going. I can't even keep track of how much collective power they're going to put together, and you're not allowed to have it. You see my point?
I do see your point, and I think it's certainly worth it to be wary.
I am wary. I'm already wary because I can think of 15 gazillion things. They did Mox News, 65,000 videos YouTube took down because he caught Leon Panetta on the BBC saying we got to gird the diapers of the next generation Durka Durka Jihad. Boom! 65,000 videos down.
You know, the really nice thing about library is that kind of behavior is not possible. So the outright...
No, the kind of behavior that is possible is that they own Mox News now. Domain.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, one, I think that there's a couple of responses to this. One, I'd say my very first point should be that no matter what, if you simply want to have a URL that points to your content, that is always possible. So if you want to have the kind of long, you know, like a BitTorrent URI, these kinds of long hashes, these long strings of characters, that is always yours. That can't be taken over by anybody.
Okay. On library.
It's only the English names. The ones that kind of map, that create an ability for us to write them in a short fashion, and this kind of thing, that are governed by this bidding system.
Okay, now this is one other question I have that might clear up some stuff. One of the things that we do is that I'll put a video up. I love this video. Man, it's like BBC's Power of Nightmares or Century of the Self or something. Oh, I all of a sudden create a special edition. It's like another page, you know, like Facebook kind of thing, on Freedom's Phoenix. And you can do that. I go, okay, I got a page here. It's Ernie's favorites. I mean, you know, you need to go. I can promote the crap out of that. Go here. And then I stopped. And the reason was all the videos that I would put up, any link, they get lost. They're gone. They go away. They kind of, you know, this flavor, this march, this exposure, this perspective that you want to give people is not there because they keep taking the videos down. Now, I can load them up on my server. I just do that. But that wasn't the point. I'm looking for the grandma just button. And I'm going, I need to be able to put up a video and it's available and it stays there. Now, storage, you know, Sean Wilkerson, I think it's his name. I remember talking to him. It's like Dropbox encrypted. Have I always gotten it's there? Can I link to it? So then if I'm doing library, I'm going, all right, can I link to a library thing and use my browser on the World Wide Web to access it? Or do I need a different browser, right? You see my point?
Yeah, I see your point. So, and that's another great question. So library is designed to be a piece of internet infrastructure, right? You know, there are library applications and things like this, but library is actually a technology equivalent to HTTP, equivalent to BitTorrent. So it will be very, very robust. to these kinds of disruptions. It will be very, very difficult for content to disappear from
the
library.
Will I be able to link to it from a page on the World Wide Web?
Absolutely.
Oh, ding, 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 ding. Yeah. As long as what?
And as long as you've installed the, you know, you have to install a little bit of library software, but once you've installed that, you can click library links and they work right in your browser.
Cool. He's spreading the message.
All right. Had to get that in. I want you to, the reason I'm, you know, pushing back on this, because this is the stuff we've been discussing for years on this show, and a lot of the audience, and I'm, you know, waiting, edge of my seat, and I want to support, and here we go. Because all these guys, oh yeah, Ernie, won't work, man, we're going to get some and do it. And I'm going, okay, I make a decision, and we start, you know, putting a lot of effort into one, and I'm going, okay, the file is still there, and I can put a link on. Do this. Are you? I'm asking knowingly. You're at a computer, right?
Yep.
Okay. Go to Freedom's Phoenix.
Okay.
Okay. What would be a good example? Okay. Where would I? We're doing some changes here, so we're all right. Below the top four stories, you'll see blah, 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 DARPA challenges hackers, 2 million. You see right below that, you'll see a navigation bar underneath it.
Got it.
Okay, the fourth from the right, it says special editions. Go down to Ernie's favorites.
All right.
Now, this is just stuff that, you know, notes to myself, kind of, we have different ways of doing this, and I haven't even messed with it for years. I just kind of put it over there because of this problem, and I just like, screw it, okay? Until they fix this, I'm not doing it anymore. You scroll down about halfway until you get to, where is it? On the left column, it says Century of the Self, full-length documentary publisher recommended. You see that?
Yep.
Okay, click on that. Now, when you get to that page, it'll have a, sorry, this video does not exist. Now, I keep finding it and putting it up and doing it. And I could download it, but it's, you know, it's going to be some gig, you know, or a lot. I mean, it's, a four-hour series or whatever. So, I go find it, put it up, boom, it gets moved. It's gone. I need a place, and I could just put it on my server. But that's not the point. You know, I want to be able to have a service that anybody, I can put it out there and it's separate from me, because if I have it on my server, then here they come. All right. You know, it's going to be, they can take down my server. It's an excuse for them to get my server. Oh, my God. He's got the iPhone live coverage of the Zapruder film of somebody got assassinated and Ernie's got it on and you're shut down. You see my point?
Yes, absolutely.
I need a decentralized storage, and I don't want it on my server, not because I'm afraid to have it on my servers, because I know it won't be there very long on my server, and then I won't have my server anymore, okay? So I need decentralized storage to where I can link to that right there, and it's always there.
And that is the exact problem that we're trying to solve. You know, it's really a shame how ephemeral a lot of the stuff on the web is when there's just no reason for it to be.
I don't care about I know what I want. I want. And I'm going to bitch about it until I get it, okay? And if you're it, man, then I'm all over it. And now a lot of these guys at Porkfest are coming, Ernie, man, you should have seen the library thing. Ernie, you know, it's library. And I'm going, damn, you know, I'm sorry I missed it and whatever, and kind of, okay, let's have them on. So this is the problem, just a good example of the problem I'm trying to solve. When I have Michael from Mox News, I remember when they took down his 65,000 videos. I told him he'd never done an interview before. And I put a call out, hey, man, get this guy on. He came on. I was getting ready to go on vacation. So I said, look, I just want you to know, we're going to hook you up, man. You just keep those files. You got them available? Yeah, got them. I said, all right, cool. You know, because when it's time, you just upload all that. They had some juicy stuff. He was covering a lot of things during the Levolution and everything. They took all that down prior to this election cycle. And because I knew that what the free reigning of YouTube back in the day was not going to keep happening. All right, here we go.
At LRN.FM.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
I'm having a good time, having a good time.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
And so several others, I'm sure. Okay, this is, we're talking to Jeremy up here. Go to the archive, get the whole thing on the archive. But, you know, the summarize is this. I gave him an example of how, you know, I hope to use Freedom's Phoenix. I hope, see, if I take all these greats, I got the kid on the side of the road, he's walking around, he's doing, chasing Pokemon Go, which is a whole nother freaking CI, would you, seriously? Anyway, that's another thing. But he's going around doing that, and all of a sudden, and he hits record, something's happening. You know, the cop shot this assassination of the bomb guy and got it in video. Well, you know, this stuff is so controlled, and it never saw the light of the end, and you don't get it. Or it got taken down. Or, you know, this happens all the time. What happens when I get it? You know, we did this. In 05 or so, 06, YouTube was taking down, am I being detained? Am I free to go? Am I being detained? Checkpoints. Checkpoint USA. You know, we have Terry Bressy here, a scientist, work at Kitt Peak, you know, keeping asteroids from killing us, or at least know when we're going to die. He's watching that, and every time he has to go through the Tohono O'odham Reservation, and they got the alphabet soup of we're inspecting everything. And he's like, whoa, where the hell did this come from? December of 02, goes to the Ninth Circuit, wins $250,000 settlement. What happens? Well, they just learned and gotten whatever and did. But while he was recording all these border guys, they try to get him fired. They try, he works at University of Arizona. They try to get him fired to get YouTube to take him down. They do it. And I'm going, wow, well, we'll just put him up on Freedom's Phoenix. Bring it. So we're early on. We're like, bring it. Put it on. We put all the videos up on Freedom's Phoenix. And finally, YouTube overturns and they kind of whatever. And he has a YouTube channel. But the thing was, is I'm going, we'll put it over here. As time went on, at this issue, if it would have kept going and YouTube had not changed, we would have been a target. There would have been, my servers been gone. Why? Because they didn't like the data. How else do you get it? When you do decentralized, it's out there. It never goes away. But that doesn't mean anything if you can't find it or access it. So I'm going, can I link to a video? Now, Sean Wilkerson, you know, from Storage gave me an HTML5 player that he said, look, I go, how are we going to, yeah, you can do it now. You can put it on your server right here. And he sent it and we embedded it. So I can play the files, you know, I can just do it and you're done. But can I do it through a file that's out there and just click on the link and it plays on my site from a decentralized file that can never be taken away and can never go away? That's my goal. All right, Jeremy, help me out, man.
That's our goal too, Ernie. I mean, that's exactly what we're doing with Library. We're providing the decentralized access, discovery, and optionally purchase of digital content. And we're doing it in a way that is as robust as our team of very, very smart engineers can make it. And there's a lot of time and effort has gone into Library to build it to what it is today.
Okay, the next option you say, and sell. We have one site was like Descent, which is a combination of Bitcoin and WikiLeaks or something where whistleblowers can get rewarded. So I'm going, all right, if I put this up on Library and it's kind of like watch my bit from Doug Scribner, you know, he has watch my bit and you got to go blip, you know, a little bit of Bitcoin, here's your quarter, I get to see the Zapruder film, okay, unedited, you know, from space or whatever, all right? So I'm going, this is, I go, click, I get paid. Is that possible?
That is absolutely possible. Okay. Library supports micropayments, and it supports the publishers getting 100% of the price that they choose. We don't take anything.
Okay. Why? Not that I
why?
Care.
Why? Because it's a good idea.
No, I mean, why don't you take a cut? Why isn't there? What's the revenue stream for you?
So the revenue stream for us is a couple of things. One is, just to be clear with your listeners, we have kept 10% of the credits that maintain the Library namespace for ourselves. So that's part of the way that we're going to make money. We also have a variety of ways that we believe we can make money on top of that. Those include value-added services, settlement services, consultancy services. You know, we're really going to be the experts on this technology, and we think that we will be able to, you know, recoup value through that.
Okay, I need a forever thing, too. Is there something you go, and we're tired, and we take our ball and go home? I mean, you know, and we're left hanging out there. Is this a, you know, once it goes, it's done, or is it, we, you know, because I'm worried about the bus syndrome, man. You get hit by a bus, then what?
Sure. Well, but that's the you know, we don't control library. Library is a piece of open source technology. Every line of code that's written for library is available online. It can be run by any person in the world. It can be modified by any person in the world. So if I get hit by a bus, I think library gets set back about 2 days and then just keeps on going without me.
All right. I'm glad you're thinking about these problems and the use case scenarios that I put up, because that's exactly what I see is going to be revolutionary. As much as the internet was revolutionary before, this ability is going to be that kind of revolution. And I'm going worldwide kind of thing. So I'm going, all right, I just want to make sure you feel me. But then I'm going, all right, what was your motivation? What happened to you? Why are you doing this?
Me?
Yeah. Something happened. Why do you even want to do this?
You know, I'm 31 years old. I've been into decentralized technology since I learned it existed, at least 15 years. You know, I was using technologies that predated BitTorrent. So it's always something that's resonated with me. And it was an idea that kind of, it's tough to discern how the creative process works, right? These, you know, an idea just kind of strikes you. You know, where did it come from? So the sort of the origin for the idea for library was the idea that, you know, a blockchain is not just a system for maintaining accounts and balances. It's a system that can reach a consensus on a state of affairs of practically anything. So the sort of the origin for library was, well, what if we use the blockchain to maintain a catalog of digital content, a listing of digital content that can be searched and discovered by other people? And sort of, so it's this combination of seeing the failures of existing decentralized technology and seeing that the blockchain could fix that. And that was the lightning strike. That was the origin. That we came up with some other creative things on top of that, but that was the very, very seed of the project.
Okay, so you got that, you know, we can do this. And I'm going, okay, we can do this. Now I'm like, you know, this domain thing, because everybody that comes up with something, I got Namecoin this and this coin and this, you know, .tv, .me, .. FreedomsPhoenix, you know, all over the place. And I'm going, and people get it for me. They send it to me. Guys like you say, oh, I already reserved it for you, Ernie. We got it. It's all good. And I'm going, is it forever mine now? Is somebody going to take it? I mean, you know, you see my point?
Totally. And, you know, part of the reason that we designed Library the way we did was a response to the Namecoin and seeing the failures of Namecoin, right? Thinking Namecoin, something like 300,000 to 400,000 names were reserved and something like 20 were actually in use. And that's sort of the downside of allowing people to just race out there and get property for nothing and then not make productive use of it. You know, so it's better to, you know, if people are going to...
What do I care if they make productive use of it or not? I mean, I don't care. Somebody's going to make use of something someday. I can't park a domain name. I can't own it. I can't... See, the mechanism by which you're doing it, going, look, somebody's going to want... If you're making a bunch of money, well, of course, you're going to give a percentage of whatever to maintain your name. And I'm going, yeah, unless it's General Electric and they see your political activities is going to cost them trillions of dollars... In just public opinion, all of a sudden your freaking little pissant We Are Change is worth some money to them. You see my point?
Well, absolutely. But let's remember that it's not possible for someone to spend money to actually remove content from the network. The only property that acts in that way where it can potentially be controlled by another party is simply the short links, these human readable ones. And look, there are trade-offs. No matter how you design a system, there are going to be trade-offs. But I think the trade-off of preventing this kind of useless speculation and these inefficient designs, I think our design is going to be a lot more efficient.
Well, you know, it kind of thwarts a lot of the problems if I can just link to it on the World Wide Web. Then they'll go, oh, I'm sorry, it violates if you're not allowed and it's illegal to link on this platform to that that's not under our control if Chuckie Schumer just decided. We'll talk about that. Yeah, see, this is when you know, if they can, this is my mantra. If they can, they are. So when somebody comes to me and they'll say, what do you think about conspiracy fill in the blank? You know, from JFK to chemtrails to UFO to, you know, freaking underground city of Iron Sky, whatever, okay? So I'm going, I don't know, can they? Can they maintain, enhance, expand the intrusiveness and control of the people in your life? Can they? If they can, they are, okay? So I just need to know how they can. Well, if they can't delete the data, well, then I need to know if I can. You know, I just had this conversation. Paul Poy from Airblitz is on. He's been on quite a bit. I had him on last week. And I go, what are you talking about? A lot of things that he does. And I'm going, so what you're saying, the bumper sticker is, you can, they can't. So what I need to know is what the I can is and what the they can't is. If I can link to a file, put it up on my site right now where it says, sorry, this video does not exist. I go, yes, it does. And the link is over here in the embed of kind of click. If I can do that, well, that solves about a whole bunch of my problem right there. I can create my own freaking index. Or you can do it on the web. Or you can have a third party, somebody else later, library, if I got the freaking Yahoo for library. I mean, this will happen. The thing is that I'm going, okay, you know, as long as that indexing is available for us to solve this problem, it doesn't matter what somebody goes and takes. But I'm going, why would you have that feature in there for them to get a name to match to that URL? Why was that even a thought?
So we're, the design of it is we want these names to return what people are looking for, right? If, you know, imagine someone simply being able to guess what's on the other side of the URL, the way, you know, that you might just go straight to a .com because you assume that it's going to return something. We want that system to sort itself out as quickly and as completely as possible, and we think this design is the best way to do that.
So it's going to be, you're going to, instead of a Google, yeah, okay, instead, okay. Well, it's recorded, okay?
Okay. So, well, real quick, I wanted to, if you could, I wanted to get in that we've had, at some point, that we've had about 80,000 people join the wait list in the last 2 weeks. That's the response that we've gotten. And if you want, I have invite code. I don't know if you have people call in, but I have invite codes I can give out to let people skip the list.
Okay, what about me?
I can give you one, absolutely.
Well, send it to Donna and freaking, you know. I think I signed up something. I did something. What was it? Somebody sent me something. Anyway, but give me all the information to do it. So what we're offering to the listeners is what? They're going to be able to.
If someone wants to call in and ask a question, I don't know, do you have people call in at a point? But if they call in, we can give them an invite code and let them skip that 80,000-person wait list.
Primarily, most of my listenership is archive, you know, so we need something that we can put on the page and, you know.
We can just, I mean, ask people. What we want to do is just get people to sign up and to get on the list, because the sooner they get on, the sooner they'll, you know, get in. And also they can earn rewards for inviting their friends. So that's another benefit to getting involved early.
Why? Why is it a benefit?
Well, because it's free stuff.
What free stuff?
It's credits for use on the network.
Okay. So I got some library credits. That's another thing I'm going to tell on the air, is that every time I hear about one of these and they have something to invest in, or a crypto coin or something like that, because I'm investing in an idea. Well, this one's better than that one. That's not the point. I don't care. Well, we'll talk about it on air. Here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Which now voices can be heard. Just want to speak louder and louder and louder. What the hell we fighting for?
Yeah! What we fight for here on Declare. Your independence of me, Ernest Hancock. Another independence declaring kind of individual, Jeremy Kaufman from Library, LBRY.io. This is, let me tell you what happens. You know, and I haven't talked to Jeremy, you know, before or anything, so he doesn't know, and I'm just going to, you know, tell you right now, you know, full disclosure kind of thing. Whenever there is a decentralized option and they have an investment opportunity, certainly in a cryptocurrency, it's easy. I go to, you know, Shapeshift or Bittrex or whatever, and I got some Bitcoin and I put and I go buy, yeah, I get. Why? Yeah, it's $50, $100, whatever. Yeah, over here. Why? Because I remember what happened with Bitcoin. I mean, I'm talking about it. You know, I was buying them when they were, I don't know, I got my first blockchain.info, the first wallet that you can even do on your phone to even do it. You know, well, they're like, oh, no, you just this, and you load that, and Ernie, and you kind of, you adjust. And I'm like, this is where the grandma adjust button came from. They go, I go, show me this adjust button you guys keep talking about. Come over here and show me. And I'm going, and I look like 49 adjust buttons, okay? So I'm going, no, you talk to Linux people, Bitcoin people, usually the same people, and are always going on, they like it being complicated. They like it. You know, hire me as a consultant because guys, I like it. It's complicated. You can't do it. Screw grandma. Well, here comes Paul Play from Airbits, and he's like, man, these kids don't get it. If you want wide adoption, what do you think? It's some, you know, sanction from Schumer or something's going to get wide adoption? It's going to be grandma. It's going to be the grandma freaking just button. When that is easy, when it's easy, it's a just button, boom, wide adoption. Well, I'm going, okay. So I'm looking for this in the decentralized world. So what do? I don't know which one's going to be the Bitcoin. I don't got the time. I'm not a geek. I don't care. There's not that many of them. So for $1,000, I can invest in and become a gazillionaire. Because you know what? It was like, you know, freaking pennies were Bitcoin. And now they're worth $650 right now. So I'm going, yeah, I'm investing in an idea, a segment, a concept. So every one of these that come up and they have it, boom. So I already have libraries. All right. Whatever you call them, you know. What do you call them anyway?
Library credits or LBC.
Okay, so I got library credits right now. Done. Why?
So, well, I mean, first, I got to say, I could not be with you more. Then that is what we are trying to do entirely with Library. Library is not a cryptocurrency first. It is a system, it's an application for people to use, and it's designed to be as user-friendly as possible. And that's my background, by the way. So I've built software applications that's been used by millions of people to register and to participate in events. I know a ton about creating usable software, usable experiences, and that's what our focus is on. We want people to be able to download the Library program, open it up, and they're going to get an experience that's a lot like YouTube. Search, find things, channels, stream. The fact that it's powered by a cryptocurrency behind the scenes, as far as we don't care if users know that at all. Now, you know, your listeners are more into that kind of thing. Bitcoin people are more into that kind of thing. So they're going to get it and they're going to want to know about it. But we care about bringing software to the masses and less about, obsessing over cryptocurrency sort of.
It's just an easy opportunity for me to invest.
Yeah.
You know, now these, the cryptos that you use, the reason blockchain technology features so much in this is because it gives you some kind of ability or power. What is it?
So the way that I think about blockchain technology is simply that it's a new kind of database. It's a database that is robust to third party interference, such as government. And it's a database that can reach consensus when parties may disagree on what that consensus should be. And that kind of database is a really good database if you want to build a catalog of digital content.
Well, a catalog, it's not just, I mean, catalog, you mean the files, and then there's the indexing of the files. You know?
No, by catalog, I mean the index. The files aren't in the blockchain. The index of what's available is in the blockchain.
Well, gets us back to where in the early days of the internet, when you had a file online, what's that? The net, what's that? World Wide Web, what's that? When you had something, you know, that you have accessible and you could use a protocol to get off somebody's BBS, you know, their bulletin board in the server that was in some guy's basement. I remember, you know, my first time I saw the internet was called OnRamp or Indirect, and it was guys in the back of their gun shop, you know, they had a bunch of servers and modems, okay? So, I mean, you know, when you do that, I have the files available, and you're wanting to list them in some way. Now, where's the blockchain come in? Where is that done?
Well, so, you know, the blockchain is that database. The blockchain is the equivalent of, you know, YouTube has a database that here's all the
So where does the public and private key structure come in?
You mean related to wallets or related to...
No, related to your... Okay. You have the data, and it's stored decentralized in some way. Because we have two different things here. We have files and the index. So the files are stored how? Is it kind of a made safe thing? It's encrypted, chopped up, distributed over hard drives? How does it work?
Exactly. Encrypted, chopped up, distributed over hard drives. It's similar to BitTorrent in that it uses what's called a DHT or a distributed hash table, but we do this additional encryption step that makes it a little more secure.
Okay. So you got it out there, have secure data. We just now got to get it. How we know what to get. Now, in the early days, we were promoting a URL. However that came up, we're going, it's right here. Go on your computer, click this shows. And you go, cool. And we were getting awards, and my friends, you know, top 5%, top 5 featured of the internet, top 5. But this is 94, 95, 96. And when that was going on, we had to promote the link. Then here come Yahoo. So you're trying to create an internet storage that can't go away and decentralized, and your own Yahoo to go with it, or Google, or whatever. No?
Well, no, I mean, I absolutely remember that, right? I mean, you're talking about when the early days of the web, you had all these websites. Well, how do you find them? And decentralized technology is very much in the early days of the web. You've got all this content out there, but how the hell do you find it? And the people that try to help you find it aren't very popular with some other people. So, you know, we are absolutely recognize that problem, and we're trying to create a better system for it. This is the first, you can think of library, you know, what the blockchain is actually doing is it's creating the first search engine, the first way of discovering what's available in a decentralized network.
And the power to control that is whoever pays the most for it or something? I don't understand how that works.
So that's only for the sort of user-friendly name. So if you want a name like LBRY:// wonderful life, that name is going to be sold in this kind of continually bid format. If you just want a name that doesn't change, you can have LBRY:// AX794B6, and, you know, it goes on.
Well, it's just a link on. I'll just, you know, keep all my stuff on the World Wide Web and link to all the stuff if I can do that. Then I don't
care.
And
that's fine. And so if you prefer really knowing that it can never, ever change, then you can get the really long and non-user-friendly ones. If you want a user-friendly one, that is going to cost some money, and potentially that cost could go up over time if there's
okay, check this out. Jeremy,
really
I'll give you an example. Yeah. Freedoms Phoenix has over 200,000 links. Now what?
Those can all, I mean, assuming they go to static content, videos, audio files, and so on, those can all be brought into library. 200,000 is a very small number.
Yeah, but it might be a very big number for me to want to kind of control the links.
Well, you also don't need to, there's also a system where, like, so you could control one name and then kind of have them be at a subspace under that. So, you know, they could be at, if you're controlling Freedoms Phoenix, you can actually put a bunch of things under that by having the URLs be things like, you know, Freedoms Phoenix, and then a query parameter that says which subset of the Freedoms Phoenix namespace should be returned. So you don't need to necessarily, you wouldn't need to buy 200,000 names to put up 200,000 pieces of content.
Well, then it would make that one name very valuable to somebody that wants to shut us up. See, the thing is, I'm going, as long as it's available, you know, as a link that I can put on our site and go, that's really, you know, my main concern. I don't want... I'm sorry?
Don't buy the name. Don't buy the name. And if you're worried about that aspect, you don't have to do the name buying.
Well, how often is it going to come back? Is it every morning I got to upbid?
You have at the upper end, you have 2 weeks to respond.
Okay. This is going to be an issue, I guarantee it. Now, you may have the best solution, and it'd be, but I'm thinking, when you're just thinking economics, you're thinking dollars and cents and profit and loss on a spreadsheet of whatever. When you're dealing in politics, they think in terms of public opinion. They'll spend billions of dollars to change people's minds. If you're going the wrong way and you're WeAreChangeAntiWar.com, Freedoms Phoenix, whatever, I'm telling you, it's worth some money, and I don't want to be competing with myself all the time. Library credits.
Money, power.
Okay, we're still in the archive. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sure. I'm actually skeptical that it's good politics to spend a bunch of money to censor someone else. I mean, I think if the government spent, you know, $100,000,
you want me to give how many examples you want me to give you?
Sure,
that's exactly what happens.
Point is, no, I'm not claiming that it doesn't happen, but it does not happen in a way that is obvious to the public, that can be really proven. And when they if someone is spending $100,000 to take down your URL and replace it with something else, that's being done on the blockchain, and it's very obvious and it's very provable.
Oh, no. They don't care about obvious. I mean, how many, did you go through the Loveolution, what they did to Ron and 8 and 12 and this Trump thing and whatever? I mean, you know, when it comes down to they, them, those, they don't give a crap if it's obvious.
Well, I obviously, we'll have to see how it plays out. But
yeah,
I
no, I'm
think
I'm
it's
with
you.
I
think it looks bad.
It does. They don't care. What you think? Bad guys think they want you to make them look bad. We're bad. Don't mess with us. You know. Yeah, we got unlimited resources. Well, it's all bluff and bluster. But the thing is that to have the ability for me to have a file that I can link to. Now, let's talk about that particular trait. I have a decentralized file that I have loaded up. Then I put a, I just take that link of whatever you're talking about and put it into my software, and it creates a hyperlink, and I click it, and it goes, and that's it. I mean, is there an add-on? Is there a browser link or add-on I got to do? I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah, no, so right now you need an add-on. To have the links work, you need an add-on.
Okay, which is, I mean, it's I download this add-on to what? Chrome, Firefox, all of them?
You actually download it to your operating system, and then it will work in any browser.
Really? Okay. So I download this, and your browser will go to that link.
Yep, that's right. And you know, the links are written as LBRY:// That's why we picked the four letters, because that's fairly traditional for, you know, protocols to be a short.
So library is considered a protocol. You're like HTTP kind of thing.
That's our real competitor, Ernie.
All right. So, okay. So this is the nuts and bolts. I go and I say, all right, Derek and I have been, you know, we're just, ass not ready. This is nap. Library says, hey, man, we'd be ready. We're rock and roll and whatnot, waiting on you now. And I go, okay. So we download the... I don't know what you call it, add-on into my operating system so I can use it. And then I take my 300-500 gigs of data and I upload it somehow. And then I can take the link to each one of these pages or whatever, and it goes to there. And that's another thing. The actual loading up each one of these pages that have its own unique URL, does it going to be able to see it that way as a separate file?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, we're at this point not advocating usage of library to host websites. We think it's good for audio files, video files, potentially for books or things like that, video games. It could potentially be used for websites, but we're not ready to really push for that.
Okay, so let me tell you what, you know, how the site works. Each one of the pages that you'll go up and see it, it's just a, you know, it's an aggregator, but there are a lot of original content up there, and we'll get like a PDF of some document. TSA did this. You know, we have the Obamacare behind the scenes of Dade, and you can't and don't show it or you go to jail, kind of whatever the hell it was. Whatever, we put it up. So I got PDFs, audio and video, of course, from the show. Then I have whatever else. And anything that I want to be, you know, no, you want this forever in the Zapruder film of the iPhone and the kid in the rim of the car bomb. And they put that up there. It's up there. It's decentralized. It's never going away. And I can put a link on my site. So what you're saying is I could take all my PDFs, all of my audio and video and everything, put that on there. And then I don't need all this URL stuff. I just got files that link to it on my World Wide Web page that has that link to that document.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right. So now I call, you know, Derek's probably listening, you know, not to the archive part, but the live part. I'm going like, hey, Derek, so what's it going to take for us to just put all of our original files, you know, maybe articles or whatever the hell we want to do or just start doing? You know, I start evolving. I go through a lot of my favorites like that. I go, yeah, I want this loaded up there. I create the file. I put it up there. Then what about copyright violation? This is why I have YouTube channels and all that, but I don't do it. I'm on Vimeo. And the reason is because you'll hear in my rejoiners, I got some classic rock and roll. Boom, man, you're tagged and you're not allowed and you can't. And I'm going, you know, that was probably 2009, around in there that happened. And I said, I can already see where this goes. They're going to control content because they can. and it's just, you know, whatever excuse they use, doesn't matter whether you got 5 seconds of Led Zeppelin. They're just going to, because they can. And if they can, then I'm going, hell no, I don't want to invest over here. I want to be somewhere where they, I can, they can't. So I'm going, where's my I can, they can't thing? I go put these files on there, and I got a full length freaking, I'm doing Alice's Restaurant, the whole damn thing on Thanksgiving. And they go, oh, we're going to shut down. We got to get some library. Where do they go? How do you respond? What is the response to Central?
Again, they can't take it off. The only thing that they can do is if you're using the URL system, yes, those are competitively bid. So those short URLs, those the user friendly URL, the content itself, which is that can't be taken off. Now I also have to be very clear that, like, you know, we are discouraging usage of library network for infringing content, right? That's not, we don't want library to be the place that people, you know, go to find infringing content. It's not designed to be a system for infringement. It's simply designed to be a system that is user-controlled and resistant to
censorship. Yeah, blah, 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 but that's what's going to happen.
Well, I mean, that's we think the economic design is such that while it won't be zero, we think that usage will primarily be legitimate.
Okay, let me put it this way. Every Princess Disney movie of whatever the heck I got grandkids, they kind of, now I down, I go, you know what, here it is, boom. I upload it on the library, and I go, there, you can access it wherever you want, and who's going to, are you going to censor it?
We can't censor it, but you'd be breaking the law, and you'd be subject to the penalties of the United States government.
Oh, so they're going to know who I am putting it up?
I mean, if you just uploaded it from your computer and you were hosting it from your computer, it would be discoverable that that was you.
Okay. Hosting it from my computer. What does that mean?
If you are continuing to host the files, or even if that, and, you know, when you're publishing it, that you're publishing it with a signature as to who was the publisher.
You know, Jeremy, I got my next guest coming in. I want to keep talking to you.
I get it.
You know, let's say I want to schedule this again. I want to have Derek on when we do this. Can we do you in a week or two?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. Thanks, man. I got to go.
All right. Bye. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Peace.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here. Let us make them remember. We are not afraid.
Unafeared individuals, we bring to you here on Declare Your Independence. I'm me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Okay, we're going to get to we were going long and talking just right up to from Jeremy Kaufman. We're going to be talking more about that, but, oh, just as interesting, Jesse Walker, his article entitled Trumpland and Reason Magazine. I read the article and I'm going, okay, let's talk about this. This is somebody kind of libertarian oriented individual going into this Trump thing and seeing what's up. So I'm going, okay, let's get his impression. The convention just kind of started yesterday. It's getting going hard and heavy, you know, today. We had Dr. Tamburi come on, talk to us about the first day of the convention. We'll check in with him for about 15 minutes is all I can stand till Thursday. We'll do a whole 3 hour of whatever, but I'm just telling you. You know, to get inside, and a lot of the guys have gone to the rallies, they've been to the stuff, you know, from the first one that he had here in Arizona, the big giant whatever, then another one out in Fountain Hills, had some of the guys go, and we talked to them, but Reason Magazine, you know, has a gentleman that, Jesse Walker, that went on the trail. His books, he's the book editor at Reason Magazine. He's written on topics ranging from pirate radio to copyright law to political Paranoia, and he's author of the books Rebels on the Air, An Alternative History of Radio in America. That'd be interesting. You know, and the United States of Paranoia, A Conspiracy Theory. Now, he has a lot of his articles that appeared in, like, everything. You know, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, on and on and on and on and on. Long list. And he's a graduate at the University of Michigan, where he received a degree in history. And his personal blog is the Perpetual 3-Dot Column. All right. Let's go ahead and talk to Jesse, welcome to the show, man.
Howdy. Glad to be here.
This is a phenomenon. Had you gone through the... how old are you? That helps me out right there.
I'm 45.
Okay, so you graduated in the early 90s?
Yeah, my college, I graduated in 91.
Okay, so this is... You're coming into, you know, life. You're probably like Clinton era. You know, you're kind of got the Clinton thing, you know, embedded. And then you maybe a little Daddy Bush. You get Clinton, and then it's W and Obama. You haven't had a lot of luck with your view of presidents, I imagine.
I don't know when I would have had to lift.
I know. So. Thank you for that. What I wanted to do is get your perspective, but let's get a little background before you go into the Trump land thing and going on the road here, because you had to have been experienced a little. If you're at Reason, you probably, you know, saw this Ron Paul Levolution thing, and I'm wondering how much you saw that as outside the box, or did you expect it? Did you see it coming? Was it, oh my God, this is different? And then you get the Trump thing. So before we go to the Trump thing, give us kind of your view of presidential politics and American politics to begin with, and then we'll talk about the Trump thing.
Well, you mean specifically about Ron Paul, or?
Well, yeah, I mean, we learned a lot from that. I mean, you know, I know it's not just Ron Paul, it's how the system treated the people rising up finally, Generation Next, the youth wanted to have their say. You're so freaking not allowed. It kind of created this Trump thing anyway. But going into the Levolution, what were you doing in like 06, you know, 07 around there?
I was working for Reason, and I was caught by surprise by that, like Ron Paul himself was, you know. Before he had that onstage confrontation with Rudy Giuliani, I just sort of figured that he would be, the one guy standing up there saying libertarian answers to most of the questions and flying the flag, and that would be it. And then when he had his exchange with Rudolph Giuliani, who, of course, was speaking at the RNC last night, so maybe we haven't had as big a revolution as some people would hope.
Islamofascism, 9/11 is Islamofascism.
So it was, I remember when that happened, the conventional wisdom was that, well, we won't be hearing from Ron Paul again because he just defied the conventional wisdom, whereas I thought, oh, we're going to hear more from Ron Paul because he's the only person up there saying this. And I know that there are some people who agree with this, even within the Republican Party, and I was right about that. So I wasn't surprised that it was what lit the spark, but I didn't expect the spark to light just because, I mean, that was a really gloomy time of politics, if you remember. And the idea of, Paul taking off, but of that then, you know, really kickstarting a lot of broader libertarian activism.
Were you involved? I mean, you're at Reason, but I mean, were you?
I've been a libertarian since the 80s.
In what way? I mean, did you run for office? Were you a street activist? Did you?
I've worked for Reason since 1999. I used to work for Liberty Magazine, if you remember that, back in the 90s. In college, I had been involved with a local libertarian group. I did, although I've never been a big Libertarian Party guy, a big electoral politics guy. I remember when I was 18 years old, and I was saying, you know, I don't think this running for office thing is really going to get much anywhere. And they said, well, don't knock it if you haven't tried it. And I allowed them to put me on the ballot for city council, which was absurd because I was 18 and had just moved to town, you know, half a year earlier, the worst. But, you know, I had fun with it and, actually got some favorable coverage because the reporters thought my jokes were funny.
But did you free a couple of minds?
I can remember going to record at the cable access channel in Ann Arbor. That's where I was. I went to the University of Michigan, so I was in Ann Arbor. And the person was just taping these spots, you know, that no one was going to see to run on cable access for the different candidates. And I did this little Mr. Rogers neighborhood parody where I talked about privatizing garbage collection. You know, it was like the ultimate, you know, sort of dull libertarian issue. But it was, you know, I did it in what was kind of an entertaining way, because I actually saw the producer sitting there nodding and wanting to talk to me afterwards. And I doubt he even lived in my district, you know. But I mean, as far as getting a vote, who cares? You know, I think he got interest. So that would be one person out there who maybe was introduced to some ideas. And it's I mean, I don't know. It was an interesting experience, but I've that's my only time I've ever dipped my toes in electoral politics, and it was sort of a lark, and I was very young, and I do not think I would do it again.
Well, it's, you know, on the other side, I never really anticipated politics was going to cure anything by itself. I mean, it's just like a side effect of something. Mm-hmm. You know, it was an opportunity to get on a free soapbox to be able to go, you know, freedom good, government bad. I mean, you know, right, I can say that for free. Okay, well, I'll keep saying that, you know. So but in the process, you learn a lot. I went all the way as my own attorney, man. I'm standing before the Ninth Circuit oral argument on 44 election laws in Arizona. I was butthead. I'm one of them. Well, they're not going to rule in your favor. They're going to say, when I go, I don't care. I just want them to say it. You know, I just wanted people to know what's going on. Then when Ron Paul did that, he had spoken at a couple of our freedom summits that we have had over the last decade, and first one in 01, and he comes in twice, and we already knew what he was going to say. When they said he was going to, thinking about kind of sort of creating a blue ribbon panel, he's thinking about running, I'm like, oh, hell, I already know what's going to happen. So we started the Levolution, did the sign. I didn't even care. I just go, look, you guys don't see what's coming. Why? Because it was pent up. It was held down. It was suppressed. And it was an entire generation. I knew when he started saying the stuff that he was, it was going to be the revelation that a lot of us for decades have been feeling, the young, that you're right, it was dark days and it was a light. Well, here it comes. Well, Trump have any of that light? We're going to find out when we come back.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
Okay, that's good to get kind of the background of who and what, and I feel a lot better about than we know. So now we're going to go into the Trump thing. How do you want to start it?
Oh, we could start at the beginning, you know. You can just ask me about...
Were you assigned, or did you go, let me do it?
Oh, you know what? It was actually a bit of both. My editors came to me and said, we'd like you to do a story about the Trump rallies, and I had literally just an hour earlier been saying, you know, I think I ought to go to some Trump rallies and check out what's happening. So,
okay, let me tell you what's been going on.
Yeah.
When he did the escalator thing, came down like into June or something last year, there's one of the activists here, the Ron Paul guy, his name is Dr. Frank Tamburi, that... he's a naturopath that's never taken anything but cash. After years, all of a sudden, six members of his medical clinic there, they all went to cash, right when Obamacare kind of hit, and they go, yep, we're all cash now. Life sucks for y'all. So they saw this coming. He spoke at a lot of Republican things. He's a big Ron Paul, you know, supporter guy. He's at the Republican meetings telling them about Obamacare, what this means, and the philosophical whatever. His family, his father and uncles are in the high-rise steel Philadelphia business. So they kind of, you know, same Christmas cards they get, you know, of Trump or whatever. So he understood. He goes, I don't think you understand. It is the mindset. I know I have Thanksgiving dinner with Trump. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, not with him, but I mean, you know, all his family is, I understand the mentality. I read his book, Art of the Deal. This is what's going to happen. So this was since last July, every week on Thursday, we did at least 2 to 4 hours every Thursday, went long on the show, podcast. He'd bring in all the cuts. He'd watch Fox News, so I didn't have to. He'd have all these clips and cuts. We've been doing probably 90 hours of Trump for the last year. So I've been covering every single step of this up to then. And the whole time I'm going, it just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It's not over. Jeb is going, it's going to be Hillary, Jeb, Hillary. Oh, Hillary's going to be guys and she's never going to be in that. She's going to be there and Jeb. And then Jeb drops out and all, and it's Trump. I go, convention's not over. So there's the dollar bet there. So we've been building up and had him in the first hour. And the point is that I've been deluged with this to get a view from your perspective inside at there behind the stage kind of thing, which I got the impression you had been, were able to do. I'm going, I want to have that perspective added to this tapestry that we've woven over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I care. You're still voting. I mean, you know that, but it is a cultural thing. This is my big, during the Levolution and all that, I'm just like, look, this is just how many minds you can free. That's why I ask you when you ran, hey, you know, you got a television producer guy sitting there going, yeah, what he said. All right, here we're coming back.
Hey, at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring, bullets loading. You're old enough to kill, but not for voting. You don't believe in war, but what's that gun you're toting? And even the Jordan River has bodies floating. But you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't.
Yeah, I don't think we're on the eve of destruction. They want you to think we are. They're doing everything to have on the eve of destruction, or you feel that way, or whatever, and kind of I vote for, and you don't even have an income. I mean, seriously, at this country, that's what we get. That's what's, you know, our options is Hillary, Rodham Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump. I mean, I'm like, damn, but at least Donald brings said, you know, there's a nuss mystery factor of what it might be a dynasty. I mean, you we'll get it behind the scenes, you know, from Jesse here, because behind the scenes, what are we looking at? He's got an entire family. We party and educated and got business and, you know, we know what the hell we're doing. And I'm going, all right, there may be family members come. This is a future thing. Well, we'll see. Well, behind the scenes, Jesse Walker from Reason Magazine, he's a books editor at Reason, and I'm going, okay, you know, tell me everything we need to know about Trump. Now, you got, you're thinking about doing this, somebody should do this, and within an hour, they come to you and they say, hey, Jesse, guess what we want you to do? And you go, ooh, I was just thinking of that, let's go do it. Well, what was it you were planning on doing, and how's it worked out?
Well, I wanted to check out some, I mean, I had some particular reasons in mind that are kind of, you know, beside the point now, but the Trump rallies were getting a whole lot of attention, partly just because of the Trump campaign, you know, taking off and people wondering, you know, what's going on? Is he going to be the nominee and so on? But also because of all the reports about violence. First, there was a focus on violence by Trump supporters. Then there was more focus on violence by protesters, because it was kind of sequential there. So I just wanted to check out the scene for myself. And in a way, I mean, you were saying behind the scenes. I mean, it was behind the scenes of the movement, you could say, or right in the scenes. It wasn't behind the stage or anything like that, because they wouldn't give me credentials to go to the press area. So
why?
I just got a regular ticket and went in through the front door.
Throughout this whole time, they haven't given you any press credentials?
No. I mean, a lot of people, and it's better not to have them,
I learned, because they
had this sort of penned-in area where, you know, I mean, the one advantage is that you have guaranteed get in there. You don't have to, I mean, it's, you wait in line, you talk to people, it's good as a reporter, but these are very crowded events, and you weren't guaranteed you were going to get in on time or even get in on at all. But I managed to get in each time, slipping in a little bit. So that wasn't a problem. And this way I was able to wander around a bit, get out on the floor, try to get near when, you know, people were dragged out, and just talk to a whole lot of people. And knowing there have been stories of reporters being, you know, kicked out because they were interviewing people in the stands, but nothing like that happened to me.
Wait a minute. Reporters talking to people on the floor, they kicked them out?
Or being warned that they, if they don't cut it out, they'll be kicked out.
Cut what out? Talking to people?
Go. What's that? Yeah, the Trump campaign people. This did not happen to me. I'm saying this is something I had heard from other reporters happening at other places, and me saying, well, that's, I guess, the one little risk I'm taking here, but, you know, nobody cared. If people don't want to talk to you, the Secret Service people wouldn't talk to me, for example.
Well, no, I'm thinking it's more like you have a raw story, common dreams, Daily Cause reporter going up. Well, don't you think that? I mean, you know, they just pissed off somebody. Hey, get this reporter out. He's bugging me. You know, but I wouldn't think a reason guy would be, you know, I don't care.
I think it really has more to do with just the mood of the people who were playing enforcer that day, because it was not like someplace like Ross.
Well, how many rallies have you gone to?
I went to three rallies. I went to one in Albany, New York. I basically did this in April. So I went to one in Albany, New York. I went to one on the Eastern Shore of Maryland. And I went to one in Harrisburg, PA. And they were all pretty different, you know. Each one had a different sort of culture, a different character. There were the same tribes that sort of turn up at each one. You've got the fans, you got the protesters, you got all the vendors selling their Trump T-shirts and weird kitsch and so on. You know, you've got the cops and all that. But it's sometimes I felt like something was brewing and maybe something could break out. Other times, the protesters and the fans almost seemed good-natured about each other. You know,
here in Arizona, when he went to Fountain Hills, we were covering all that and everything, and it was. We talked to some of the guys there, and there was one gentleman that got paid $2,500 to go out and hold the sign and be, you know, and the answer to Craigslist ad kind of deal, and they go through. And most of them got $500. And the reason he got $2,500 because he was a white boy, okay? I mean, there's a lot of minorities, there was a lot of, you know, but they were, you know, some people got ramped up and paid more to be there. And I'm going, and it wasn't like a secret. They didn't care. You know, the whoever's paying them, they're like, yeah, and? You know, that's what it takes to get bodies out here. That's all we do. And I'm going, all right, that's the way they play it. It's just for, you know, TV footage, I guess.
Yeah, well, there were the rallies I went to, the protesters were there of their own accord. And, people with homemade signs and things like that. There was one guy, I don't remember if I mentioned this in the article, but on the Eastern Shore, he had decked out his surfboard, you know, as his protest sign, and he was out there, you know, doing his. Actually the same thing. You had a little cadre of Leninists who had made the 3-hour drive from Baltimore, just like I had, with their signs from their group. But it was mostly mostly just people from nearby who would come out.
Okay, so you weren't there. That wasn't in the middle of Black Lives Matter have an impact at that time.
In Baltimore, sure. Out in the Eastern Shore, no. I mean, this is many hours away. And, I mean, these were some of the people who, I mean, I went to, Freddie Gray protests and I recognized the sign. Oh, yeah, People's Power Assembly, because they were one of the more vocal, they are one of the more vocal Marxist groups in, Baltimore, and they, you know, show up at demonstrations.
What are the demonstrators demonstrating against? Is it Trump? Or are they just advocating for, like, you know, a progressive Bernie platform? Or
one thing that's true of both the Trump supporters and the Trump protesters is there's a lot of variety. Just like at the Trump rallies, you have people who are traditional Republicans, people who never vote. I've met a couple of sort of Ron Paulian people. I've met people who are the opposite of Ron Paul people. And, you know, the protests, I mean, there are people who There were some, I mean, in Albany, there were a bunch of Bernie supporters, but you had, and others, you know, Green Party people, but you had, you know, students, you had, students. You had people who were, you know, upset about the racism, upset about particular policies of Trump. Again, there was a whole lot of variety there. And crony capitalism. There are all sorts of reasons people can be against Donald Trump, and they were all represented.
They're all represented. Well, who's representing? We like them. We'll find out.
This is your Robertson Roberts Brokerage Daily Precious Metals Update. In early trading Tuesday, gold is $4 higher at $1,331 per ounce. Silver is 8 cents lower at $20 per ounce. Bitcoin is trading at $671. Silver has taken a dip but is holding a $20 per ounce floor. Buy on the dips. For more information, give us a call at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co.
Okay. Jesse, what do you want to make sure we get into when we come back? What's some of the, and what I want to do is we talked about, you know, your history and why and your motivation and what and the people that were kind of against, but we haven't got to the people that are supporters and why and how deep you drilled down on that.
Yeah.
And so I kind of that, and then, of course, whatever else you want to highlight.
We can talk about that. We can talk about sort of the differences between the different rallies. And if you want to go back, you know, sort of circle around at the end to what we were talking about at the beginning and want to sort of show how this is similar and different from, you know, the Ron Paul movement and other sort of outsider political movements, we can talk about that too.
Okay. This we went through the speaker list in the first hour, and it was...
You mean at the RNC?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just going...
It was pretty horrible last night, wasn't it? I mean...
I don't watch. I don't care. That's why...
Yeah, but did you see what the list was? I mean,
I saw the list. Well, I mean, his wife got the, you know, whatever. That's, you know... I look at it and I can see, all right, I don't see the Bush Walker machine that much in there. I don't see a lot of Karl Rove. I did see Mitch McConnell. You got, you know, Cruz and so on. I'm kind of, there was no star power in there. I mean, Scott Baio, I mean, I don't know what that was about. But the, so I'm going, there's no, it's like Hollywood has done everything they can to keep the guys out. And then you have, it seems like Republican overtures, there's some melding, they finally come into grips and acceptance kind of thing, but on a small level, you know, like there's not, you know, Arnold or anything. All right, here we go.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Trump. We're talking about, yeah, you know, Jesse Walker, book editor over at Reason Magazine. He's like, yeah, I'll go check it. I went to a few rallies in April and it was just getting hot and heavy. And, you know, then you have the people protesting the traditional, we don't like them or whatever. But who are the supporters? I mean, and think about it, Jesse. April was what? We still had some debates going on then, did we?
Yeah. No, I mean, we had the New York primary going on. I remember that because it was, well, actually, you can see which primaries it were by which ones I went to. You know, Maryland voted, Pennsylvania voted. So, it was definitely not finished yet. And it wasn't finished on the Democratic side either. I actually talked to one guy in Pennsylvania who was a big Trump supporter, but he was voting for Bernie Sanders because he just wanted to vote against Hillary Clinton. And he figured Trump had it in the bag in Pennsylvania. So the people, if I had to sort of compare them as a group to another group, I remember, I thought a lot about the Perot voters from 1993
and
96.
Yes.
A lot of folks remind me of that. But then again, Perot had sort of a mixed movement in a lot of ways, too. So,
See, a lot of people try to compare this, like the Love Illusion. I go, no, this Trump thing smells of Perot. I remember Perot. We were deep involved in kind of, well, I wasn't a Perot supporter as much as I was willing to fall on my sword to have a chance to not vote for him. I mean, you know, so I got a big dose of the Perot thing, and this smelled of that. I mean, it paralleled a lot.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, if you want to kind of get in, this is stepping a little bit aside from your original question, but just sort of thinking about these outsider movements in general, there's sort of different categories, you know, with Ross Perot, and also, even though he had very different politics, Jesse Jackson, you had these sort of populist outsiders, and you had this sort of intense sort of grassroots anger they were tapping into, but they were not going to let go of it. I mean, Ross Perot resisted every effort to make the Reform Party something more than a vehicle for his own presidential ambitions. And when they had someone else running in 2000, he endorsed George W. Bush. Jesse Jackson kept a tight leash on the Rainbow Coalition.
Wait a minute. Perot endorsed...
In 2000, he endorsed Bush, not Buchanan, not Hagelin, who had his own Reform Party campaign.
God, you just got to wonder, yeah. What the hell? All right.
I mean, you know, people wanted the Rainbow Coalition to be an independent grassroots force, but he wanted a small group he could control. So that's one model. You know, these people who are... And then... You've also got groups that are kind of like, you know, the Netroots back when that was a thing a decade ago, backing Howard Dean, Ned Lamont. They were a lot more decentralized and not under one candidate's control, but they were Democratic Party loyalists. I mean, the Perot movement was outside the major parties. Jesse Jackson, he was running as a Democrat, but a lot of the people in the Rainbow Coalition were independents, and they wanted it to become sort of a third force, might even run against Democrats, although Jackson put the kibosh on that. So, I mean, this is one thing that was different about the Ron Paul movement, because on the one hand, as you yourself know, you don't need me to tell you, it was full of people acting without any direction from the candidate.
Which was the power of it.
Exactly. And at the same time, it was filled with people who didn't really care about the GOP. You had Republicans, but you also had folks who are like, that's the battlefield we're on right now, but that's not what we're aiming for.
You know,
as a result, it was able to have sort of a long-standing movement that's larger than Ron Paul. So when I look at Donald Trump, I have to think to myself, on the one hand, there's all this grassroots passion for Trump and for Trumpism, whatever that is. And different people have their different, you know, ideas of what they're backing. But what is this? If Trump loses in November, where does this go next? Because Trump is not somebody who's got that kind of hands-off, you do your own thing attitude that someone like Ron Paul has, as you would expect when you compare their politics.
It's his dynasty of family of Ivanka, whatever I'm going to be in there, or whatever her name is, daughter. I'm going, I could see the difference from the Ron Paul thing from the beginning. I understood as an activist what this was going to do. It was going to be a generation next kind of awareness, a splinter in the mind of the public of general opinion of the bad guys don't know what the hell just happened. And mm-hmm. Then you get into the Trump thing, and there's some of that, but it doesn't have this life, because I remember Ron had a meeting in D.C. A bunch of came to meet the boys, and they're going to explain it to us. And right before he pulled out in 08, and I'm going, look, you guys don't get it. You think that you're going to create this, what became Campaign for Liberty, charge these people to be part of it, then you're going to tell them what to do. I go, they don't care. Oh, but Ernie... You know, one of the big money supporters comes up and says, Ernie, we can save the GOP. And I go, I'm looking for a wooden stake and a mallet. What the hell are you talking about? I don't care. You know, but that was the difference. There were people that they couldn't understand this freaking, every one of the congressmen went home. They came back from the summer break in 07 and they're just like, what the hell was that? Every one of them saw Ron Paul Love Illusion signs everywhere. And they're going, and Ron told me a story. Congresswoman went up and said, how are you doing this? And they're right in the middle of a vote. And it was, 4:30, whatever, to 1. And he goes, that's why. And yeah. They don't. But what does Trump represent in that? Is he going to be the one, or is he aligned with something? As I look at the RNC speaker list, it seems like he's aligning.
Yeah, well, if you watch it last night, I mean, you told me off air that you couldn't bring yourself to watch it, you know. Well, it's my job to watch these things, and then I watched a great deal of it, and I gotta tell you, I mean, a lot of people are talking about this is, you know, the rabble taking over the asylum, the old guard is out, and it's certainly true. I mean, only one former presidential nominee, Bob Dole, was in attendance and so on.
Yeah,
the
Gingrich.
Fact is, if you look at the stuff, a lot of the stuff people were saying, I mean, let's talk. To the extent that I've seen libertarians get interested in Trump, it's because they think he's going to be anti-war. Last night, the war party was out in full force. I mean, that was it was some of the most hawkish speeches I've seen at a presidential convention since the 2004 one.
So is it Islam? Is it Rudy Giuliani stuff? Islamofascism?
Rudy Giuliani, Tom Cotton, you know, Ernst. I mean, all of that, and a lot of, and when it wasn't the war stuff. I mean, there was also criticism of you know, Benghazi, but I mean, it was sort of like wrapping up with this like sort of big fear of terrorism stuff. Also, a lot of fear about immigration and a whole lot of fear about Black Lives Matter. And it was sort of fear and authority. It was sort of the double themes there.
Of course.
You are unsafe, but we are going to, this was the actual theme of the night, make America safe again. And so it was a really authoritarian.
They don't even care about the free thing. We're just going to make you safe. We're going to put you in a prison.
And I got to say, it's like, you know, and you can point to maybe some things that get into the platform that wouldn't be there otherwise, but I really feel like it's the worst elements of the Trump coalition sort of emerged dominant and were co-opted by a lot of the worst elements of the Republican Party.
God, man, we're so screwed. Okay, yeah. Scott Baio, what the heck was he saying?
I did not listen to much of his. He was only on for about 5 minutes, and I had it on like one of the cable channels, and they talked through most of it, and then I realized I got to switch over to C-SPAN so I can hear what the people are saying. But I think he was the one who had the line, make America America again, so you can... But yeah, there was this. People talk about, you know, Donald Trump is the master of stagecraft and showmanship, and there's truth to that in a lot of ways. But the convention was a bit of a train wreck as far as TV.
Well,
they had this woman giving actually a really kind of powerful speech, the mother of someone killed at Benghazi, and he called in to Fox News while that was going on, so they cut away from it so Bill O'Reilly could interview him about, you know, Black Lives Matter and stuff. He was stepping on his own show, and that was kind of stunning.
Well, that's one interesting. Was it Trump's show? How much did he control this? How much do candidates that aren't even nominated, I mean, haven't got the nomination yet, how much did they control it? Was
he
Rich Freebus,
or he calls in or not, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing I'm interested. Oh, yeah, it's one thing we just put you on. Normally, Donna, because we were running late with the other guests on the archive, but we record the breaks. So this right here is part of the archive. So you don't want to say it, don't say it, okay?
Okay.
All right. The one thing that I wanted to make sure is that I understood who really ran this convention. Everybody was going on about, you know, Trump does this and Trump's going to that, and the negotiations of Trump says and Trump and RNC and Trump. And I'm going, that's not usually the case, is it? I mean, usually it's the party does what the party does, and they'll negotiate with some of the guys, especially since they're, you know, they don't know who the nominee is yet. But and we still don't. I mean, until it's done, it ain't done. And the Bush-Walker machine tried, I'm sure, you know, yesterday during, you know, Robert's rules of can I finish, and they tried to do something. I don't know what, but I'm sure they tried to suspend the rules of we don't like Trump or something. And so during all of this, Trump really has that much control over the stage, and this is what we got the first night?
That's my understanding. You know, I mean, I think that most of what he was pushing against was, you know, who would agree or would not agree to go on. I mean, because they announced the speakers a lot later than they said they would. I think more than a week. I would have to check. There's been a lot of really bad organizing. I mean, the one actual sort of bit of genuine showmanship last night was when he made his entrance and they did the WWE style wrestling entrance, which was, you know, funny, and it was, you know, it was, but other than that, it was, and maybe, I mean, if you want to get really devious, you could say, like, well, maybe he was saying, okay, my wife and I will have the really memorable moments and everything. But it that doesn't really make sense as a strategy. I mean, it's a, I mean, I thought when he called in to Bill O'Reilly, I thought maybe, you know, he's a Twitter age guy. Maybe he just figures that the woman's speech could go viral, you know, on the internet the next day. But the point of one of these conventions, is to make your case to everybody who's not looking at the viral videos in prime time, you know? It was just seemed like a really weird choice.
As I looked at this, and that's one comment Dr. Tamber in First Hour made. He follows this stuff religiously. And I look at this, and he never said, no, I'm not endorsing it. I'm just doing it. And he finds, well, the reason I support Trump, you said it. You said it. It's been a year, and you're saying support Trump. I heard you, Mr. Libertarian. So, and then we have guys like Walter Block doing Libertarians for Trump thing. And this was after I just saw Walter in at an Arcapoco, and he got an Anarchist Lifetime Achievement Award thing. And then within a week or two, he's out Libertarians for Trump. I'm going, all right, Walter, get on the show, man. You got to explain this to me. You know.
Yeah.
So I can understand this anti-war. We're probably less likely World War III, but I would imagine you didn't get that feeling last night.
So, no, I didn't at all.
So I'm like, you know, the appeal, he's going to what? And I'm and it's all come down to the wall? I mean, did that make its head, you know, raise up, you know, got noticed? Is it a wall thing?
You mean last night?
Yeah.
Or in general? I mean, they had a big section about illegal immigration where the basic focus was one after another person got who had lost a loved one to some crime.
And the solution is a wall?
Who lost a loved one to a crime committed by an illegal immigrant would talk about it and then talk about how we need to act against all illegal immigrants. I mean, it was pretty racist, frankly.
But did they say a wall?
I couldn't remember. I mean,
yeah,
they didn't have the build a wall call and response.
Visit the
thing.
Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
A little less conversation, a little more action. All this aggravation ain't satisfaction in me. A little more fight, a little less fun. A little less fight, a little more spark. Close your mouth and open up your heart. And maybe satisfy me.
Satisfy me, baby! All right. This is the last segment of this. We were talking to Jesse Walker, books editor at Reason Magazine, in April during the, you know, it was hot and heavy during debates and, you know, big states, New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland, you know, they're coming up, and kind of he went to the rallies and he kind of got a dose. And of course he's watching it so we don't have to. But, you know, as I looked at the speaker list and you go through here, and Dr. Tamberi made the same comment, is that this looked like a lineup of Fox News. And I'm going, this is like, was I watching, is RNC another Fox News episode of?
It was very much just kind of, you know, or beyond that, it's kind of like your talk radio, right? And I guess they're kind of aiming to fire up the conservative base because they got to get the standard Republicans to go out and vote if they're going to pull this off, you know, and there's his approval ratings about among Republicans, they're high, but they're not nearly as high as Hillary's approval ratings among Democrats. So, I mean, I assume that's sort of what they're thinking, but it really is, you do not get the feeling of, you know, the populist outsiders taking over the party. You get more feeling of more sort of a low rent version of the party taking over for the night.
Okay, now this is, you know, for tonight we have Mr. Donald Trump will be officially nominated.
Yeah.
Supposedly. Okay, so we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, then you got, have some interesting theater there.
So you got,
but that would be, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be, and you got Eric Trump, Tiffany Trump, you know, and then, you know, Trump, you know, but I'm looking at, you know, we got Governor Christie tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have, you know, Governor Scott Walker.
Yeah.
Mitch McConnell.
Yeah, Ted Cruz is going to talk.
Cruz. All right, yeah. McConnell. Well, I think, yeah. Let's see, is Cruz, I think he's tomorrow.
I don't remember which.
Yeah, he's Wednesday. But, you know, tonight, it's, you know, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn of, we got, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But,
oh, that was last night. He gave the most wooden speech I'd seen in ages. Just wanted to say.
What, Michael Flynn?
Yeah.
Well, he's on tonight, too.
Oh, really? They're doing him twice?
Yeah, it goes Tiffany Trump, then Flynn, then Dana White, Ultimate Fighting Champion. I mean, you know, I'm wondering where, and then followed Mitch McConnell. I mean, think of this. You got Eric Trump, Tiffany Trump, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, Dana White, President of Ultimate Fighting Club, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, then Governor Walker. I mean, what a lineup right there, you know? So I'm going, okay, what's Mitch McConnell going to say? I mean, why the hell is he, how is he a Trump support? What's that about?
I mean, I got to say, Rick Perry spoke last night. I don't think he mentioned Trump once. He made a sort of a glancing reference to the Make America Great Again slogan, and that was just, he said something like, if we're going to make America great again, we've got to start by taking care of our veterans, you know? I mean, it was just like one of those statements that everybody, you know, in the Republican Party is going to agree with, you know, whether they're pro-Trump or not. So I think a number of these people might just not even mention the candidate or barely mention him because...
So they're trying to rally around the GOP? Is that what they're doing?
They're talking about party unity, and I mean, a lot of Republican bigwigs are just skipping the convention. It's interesting that Rick Perry, you know, who famously called Trump a cancer on conservatism, would agree to show up. But, you know, he did, and then he gave this kind of anodyne talk, which, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a bad speech as just, you know, as speeches go. I'm not even talking about the content. I'm just talking about it he wasn't making people change the channels, I think. But it was it was not a Trump speech or an anti-Trump speech. He was just out there to introduce some
soldiers.
It's
Monday. It's opening night. You'd think they'd have a little something, but it's just like, eh. Okay, so what are we going to get from Paul Ryan tonight?
I am as interested in knowing that as you are, and I will say
I guarantee you are way more interested than I am.
Honestly, I'm not sure that's even true.
You know, it just doesn't matter. It just does. See, I tell you what, my attitude is best depicted by this story. I remember when it was the birth certificate thing, and Trump going after Obama, and then you know. They had the Photoshop layered open source kind of we had on Freedom's Phoenix and make a big deal and put it there and see it's who cares. And then it's a year later and Sheriff Arpaio here in Arizona, oh, we're going to do it, Sheriff, he's going to get. And then I started getting emails and everything from people going, Ernie, yeah, I can't believe you're not covering this more. Look at this. I go, where the hell were you a year ago? I go, this was a year ago. What, all of a sudden now I got to do it because Arpaio, I mean, what? You know, I put it up. Here's one. I put up 50 stories a day. You think I give a crap about that much? I go, where were you? Well, what happens is, you know, they go, yeah, but he doesn't have it. I'm going, wait, let me get this straight. So if Obama had the right paperwork, he'd be your ruler. That's okay. You're going to be ruled by Obama. He just doesn't have the right paperwork, you know? So my thing with Trump or any of these guys, I don't give a crap. You know, I don't see them representing. They're not Washington. It might as well be freaking Brussels. I mean, I don't care. It's not that I don't see it that way. It's a culture thing. So this presidential, how important is this election? It's the most important one of my lifetime. Gee, how many times have I heard that? Okay.
I remember when Bill Clinton versus Bob Dole was supposed to be the most important election of our lifetime. This is different from most elections because usually you're looking for the very tiny sliver of differences between the candidates, and this time we get to have two candidates that are differently horrible. Horrible and distinctly different.
Well,
ways.
Wait until after all the, you know, the convention crap is done and they all start sprinting to the middle, you know?
Yeah.
And then do you think that's going to happen? Is Hillary going to sprint to the middle?
Hillary's doing that already. I mean, but Trump, it's... I don't know if he's able to. I mean, he's got sort of poor impulse control, you know, and every time he starts, he will go out and read a speech from a teleprompter that someone else wrote for him, but then he'll, you know, go back on Twitter or on a TV show and say something good. Because, I mean, he's kind of used to the, whole say something outrageous and you get the clicks, you get the attention model of campaigning. And I think he's going to have a hard time switching away from that, and I'm not sure he's going to seriously try.
Well, I'm not sure he should. I mean, if you're going to, he's, you know, Twitter the crowd. That's one thing I was thinking. I went to the Libertarian National Convention, and I wasn't planning on going, and I've been to a lot. I've ran for national chair four times, so I get it, okay? Mm-hmm. What happened was, is McAfee, I had him on in like October, then he went Libertarian, and I had him on the Friday before the convention, and we had done presidential debates with that primary and stuff. And I go, John's like, oh, you're not going. You got to go. It's going to be great. Hell, you can stay in my condo. I'll pay you your airfare. If you don't like it, it'll be awesome. You got to go. Mm-hmm. So I go, all right. Now, I was thinking if McAfee got it, which he didn't understand how it was going, and I didn't think he would. But I go, if he would have got it, McAfee would have out-Twittered Trump. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm just going, he understands the, you know, the five-minute news cycle kind of deal like Trump does. If Trump tries to abandon that, I think it'll be a big, giant mistake. Now, we have, you know, the Johnson...
You've got three different things here, though. You've got Trump running in the primary against a whole bunch of opponents and getting free media and outrage clicks. You've got Trump running in the general election where you've got these sort of moderate suburban swing voters who he should be aiming for if he wants to win, and it's not, or, you know, I don't even want to get into that, but it's a different audience, let's say. And then you've got how does a third party candidate break through, which is a completely different issue too. So what makes sense for John McAfee to do in the general election isn't necessarily just in terms of raw political, I mean, setting aside who you want to win or any of that, isn't necessarily what it makes sense for Donald Trump to do.
What is Donald Trump's main thing? I mean, is it, it's all, because I remember him say, I can't remember a time I haven't seen him on TV for decades, him didn't mention president. I mean, you know, so this is not something new, but I'm getting the impression that it's kind of the beginning of a dynasty of his whole family, whether he wins or not.
I don't know. I mean, I don't, his family has become a lot more visible. I don't know that they're going to try to do, you know, the Chelsea Clinton his next in line thing.
No, I'm thinking Kennedy's.
yeah, oh boy. Yeah, it's or Bush's.
I'm not thinking Bush. You know, the Bush, I got to say Bush Walker. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, the Bush machine is doesn't represent a family or a philosophy or other than we rule you, and it's kind of, I mean, you know, and Daddy Bush is, you know,
well, that's Kennedy's too, you know.
I mean, yeah, it was a different kind of promise from the Kennedy. I mean, if you go back, I mean, I was too young to really live it, other than a little kid watching Robert Kennedy's funeral kind of thing, and Martin Luther, and, you know, I lived in Florida in 67, 68 when all that was going on. I'm like, whoa, there's something. Even as a kid, you can see it. But I this Trump thing, I'm wondering if we're going to be witnessing history, or we're just going to go, yeah, made us look again. Made you look. Well, yeah, you made me look. And then at the end of it, it's more of the same crap. Is he going to be a real change once he gets in? Should he win?
Is that a question?
Yeah. Is it going to be a real change?
I'm sure there will be all sorts of changes, but not the kinds that people are hoping for.
Yeah, we don't know. We'll talk a little bit until, you know, he has to go or becomes boring. Okay, just stay right there for the archive. We'll say goodbye here off air. Thanks for listening. All right, there, we can yak a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a break. Now, you're the third hour. It's one reason I have. Do you have some time to talk? You got to go?
I got to go in a couple minutes.
But, okay.
I mean, if you want to go up to noon, that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. The main thing that I'm looking at is culture. Everything that we do, all that we've done, the Ron Paul thing, that was all about, it wasn't about the election. They were always on my ass, the campaign. Oh, we need this. We're like, talk to the hand. I don't have anything to do with the campaign. I don't care. And I probably spent 45 minutes of conversation with Ron over eight. I've talked to him more since 12, you know, and have him on the show than we ever did during the camp, because I didn't want to have anything to do with it. Not because of a legal thing or something. I just didn't care. I'm going, no, I don't care what you say. Has nothing to, you just keep saying what you're doing, because then you're dealing with this campaign. You're dealing with Republican crap. You're dealing with stuff that I just freaking don't care about. And they're like, oh, we need you to go knock door and do it and tell the people. And kind of, no. I'm all about individuals representing their own expression of whatever the hell they want. And it just exploded, and they kept trying to bring it into the campaign, and they just didn't get it. I think Ron did, but the people in the campaign mode Republican structure, it was all about a culture shift. Well, what's the culture shift on Trump? It's not a freedom thing. It's we hate Mexicans and, you know, and whatever the hell else. I don't even know what the hell else it is. What is his platform? What is his social impact for the future? I mean, we can leave on that because that's after all of this, win or lose, what change do we get? A wall?
I mean, it's about backlash, really. I mean, it's the post-Ferguson backlash, the the ISIS backlash, it's not backlash with the Mexican fears because that's kind of constant among some people, but it really is this kind of fear and authority thing that they had going last night, and it's channeling, I think, a lot of people who are being kind of channeled in a freedom-friendly direction 2 or 3 years ago are now being kind of drawn in this other direction. And there may be a little bit of overlap on some, but not all, foreign policy questions, maybe a few other things. But it's, some kind of other kind of populist concerns.
Well, is he going to...
Mostly kind of diverting people away from the sort of stuff that Ron Paul and folks like him were talking about.
Well, you know, I remember George Bush, www.warmonger.com Bush. I mean, when he got up and said, we're not going to nation build. Boom! Yeah. That's the greatest thing. We love you long time. He gets in, and of course, he does what he does. But yeah. Trump is not even doing that. I mean, I'm going, you know, are you... I mean, he does say little measured things. We don't have to, you know, bomb everybody. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. But is he going to be the anti-war president compared to Hillary? Or is she going to...
Well, I mean, not that Hillary is in any way anti-war, but I mean, it's, there's the kind of two different questions. I mean, there's the, how would he govern, which is this big question mark, you know, and also has to do with what he can get away with because he'll be hemmed in by this and that, and will he try to break various constitutional bonds that are supposed to hem him in and so on.
Reagan was successful at,
But then the other question is what does he represent? Just in terms of, grassroots political movement and or energy. And that's sort of what I'm talking about, is that he's really diverted the sorts of things we were seeing 2.5 years ago, you know, left and right working together on criminal justice reform, people being extremely war-weary. So that, you know, one poll even had a majority and another had a plurality saying we should not have gone into Afghanistan. Not we should get out, we should not have gone into.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff that was really kind of positive from a libertarian point of view, Trump represents the negation of a great deal of it. And it's sort of the fear that and rejection that had been aimed at the authorities has been largely sort of aimed at, you know, outside groups, scapegoat groups.
Do you see politics as a vehicle for change or shift or culture?
I look at politics as sort of reflecting culture in a lot of ways. I mean, I follow politics in two ways. One, just on the sense of I want to know what happens next. I want to see which faction is up and down. That's the sort of inside Washington politics. But the more interesting thing for me is kind of what you were getting at about culture, because my colleague Nick Gillespie likes to say that politics is a lagging indicator and that the real change happens in the culture.
Right.
And it's what you were saying about the Ron Paul movement is, I mean, it was a real case of really sort of spreading ideas in a way that does not usually happen in a political campaign. It's very rare for a presidential campaign to be like that. And when it is like that, it's usually not ahead of the game. It's something like, you know, Eugene McCarthy runs in 1968, and a lot of people go clean for Gene because they've already got these ideas and they want to sort of, do a political battle. It's very different for a lot of people to get interested in libertarianism because of this guy running. So that was unusual. And it's one of the reasons why I didn't expect it, because I'm so cynical about the political arena.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it. I tell you, I was on the street, man. I'm telling you, it wasn't political. It was cultural. Yeah. It was internet. It was individuals being able to express themselves. And, oh my God, YouTube. I mean, you know, I could see, it was so crystal clear to me what was going to happen. And I'm just going, man, and that's what Dr. Frank Tamburi convinced me to do the weekly show on the Trump thing. He goes, as sure as you were about the Ron Paul thing, I am about the Trump thing. I go, all right, you know, you want to go all in like that because everybody thought it was a joke. He goes, it's not. You watch what happens. Well, he was right. And I'm going, what is that perspective that gives us that view, you know, that we can see? So I'm going, all right, yeah, it is culture. And the reason I asked the question originally, what do you think is going to be the legacy of this campaign, is because that's going to carry on into, you know, 18 and 20 and so on. Are people going to go, yeah, this time we're going to do it right this time, and we're going to make sure they really count the votes and don't use the machines or paper count, whatever. This time, we're going to do it this time. And I'm thinking at some point, you know, people are going to be going, you know, this presidential politicking thing, we're just not going to play. And if they do play at all while they're looking for a job, you know, it may be more local. I'm just, before you go, give me that perspective. Are you seeing presidential politics having this level of major look, or is it going to diminish?
Let me unpack that a little bit. There's, you know, you ask about the long-term legacy of Trump, and so much of that depends on who wins. I mean, think about if Obama had lost in 2008. Like, McCain wasn't going to beat him, but let's say Hillary Clinton had managed to stop it. We would remember him not as this guy who became president and disappointed people in various ways and, Obamacare, the drone war and so on. People would remember him as this insurgency within the Democratic Party. It would be linked to the net roots. It would, a lot of energies on the left that wound up getting co-opted, you know, would at least for four more years be kind of uncontained. But because he became president, it became something very different. And I think something similar with that. I mean, if Trump wins, then the legacy is the Trump presidency and whatever comes of that. If he loses, then the question is, you know,
how are we going to get our wall?
Then get burned in? Yeah, I mean, does this get? I mean, like the Tea Party movement was a big thing, and it got eventually, you know, co-opted, and now
from the beginning,
the husks of it are backing Trump. You know, are we going to see that in the long term happen to the Trump movement, and something different, maybe better, comes along after it? And I don't know.
All right, guys, thanks for spending the extra time with me.
Sure.
You know, I'm just it is. I guess this, at least you can say it's interesting, you know, but I'm looking something different. Like the hour before you, really excited about, you know, I've been covering for years this decentralized internet, you know, and this particular one, library, they, you know, you're going to be able to put up whatever data or files and it can never be censored or taken away and always have access. And, you know, and that really warms my heart. I've been really waiting for that. When the decentralized, the back end of Freedom's Field, all ready for the decentralized, you can never take it down, suck it. Because antiwar.com, all of a sudden Google Ads said, nope, can't have the ads. You know, We Are Change, you can't monetize certain videos. Mox News, 65,000 YouTube's taken down. I mean, it just, I'm going, whoa, they are shutting this down. And a lot of it is, you know, you got the revelations of Snowden, that brings up a lot of stuff. You got, you know, whatever's happening now. I'm seeing borders and boundaries and you, it's like Generation Next globally versus all these little, you know, colored grid world globe with gang sign colors of country, kind of who cares? And it's going to change, and I'm wondering what's going to spark that. Well, it's already happening. I think politics is just getting in the rearview mirror. It's just, you know, going over the horizon. You're just going to, it's not going to be the same. And that, you know, and hopefully Reason Magazine is going to be on the edge of that. And when you come across something you think we should talk about, please call me or email me and let's hook it up, would you?
Okay, I will. All right.
Hey, thanks for the time, man.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Peace.